Morning, morning, sir.
Are we waiting for the minister or are we starting?
No, we should start. The minister has attended an apology. I won't be able to come. I'll be leading the delegation.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I've also received an apology from Honorable Mapatsa. Morning, Honorable Sheikh. You're welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning.
Morning, Honorable Groenewald. Is Groenewald here? I don't see his name. Sir Blanche. Morning, Honorable Sir Blanche.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Good to see you.
Thank you. Honorable members, there's no long introduction today. I did the introductory comments last week. If there's anything urgent you would wish to mention before we start. I would like to congratulate Honorable Mofokeng for deployment and appointment as the Whip of Justice. Honorable Mofokeng, we congratulate you and we know that you'll still be joining us. I pray that you will have enough time to still be in police. And silently, I'm also praying that they won't remove you from the police committee. So thank you very much for being with us today. I've received your apology that you will be leaving late. Honorable Deputy Minister, I hand over to you.
Chairperson.
Oh, good morning, Honorable Meshu. How are you?
Good morning, Chairperson and all members. And the Deputy Minister, in your introductory remarks, you asked whether anybody wants to say anything before we start. Is that still standing?
Yes, of course it's still standing. I just saw no hands. Go ahead, Honorable.
Okay, my apologies. Okay. Two things. I'm going to ask you to be excused at 12 o'clock, please. But secondly, I have a question. Whether some of the questions that were not answered this past week could be, we could ask follow-ups on them?
Well, that of last week's presentation.
Yes, ma'am.
The SAPS delegation is not here today, but I'm going to schedule a meeting with SAPS where you could ask follow-up questions.
Thank you.
Does that assist you, Honorable Mesh?
Yes, ma'am, it does. Thank you so much.
We have CIRA and the Civilian Secretariat here today. So when we have our next round with SAPS, I'll ensure that you do have chance to ask them follow-up questions. Today's meeting is a four-hour meeting again today. So we'll do 2 hours with CIRA and 2 hours with the Civilian Secretariat. And then tomorrow we have 3 hours with IPED. Let us see who the delegation is with IPED tomorrow. If the entire delegation is there tomorrow, then I'll allow you to ask questions tomorrow as well.
Thank you, ma'am.
Honorable Deputy Minister, you may proceed. Deputy Minister, please introduce the team. Deputy Minister, whatever you're comfortable with, say.
Comfortable with everything. We must just be guided.
Deputy Minister, can we find out which slides they have loaded? Can we find out which slides you have ready for us, Dr. Kinnis? Vals, could you please tell us which slide you have loaded?
Chair, it must be the Secretariat and then CIRA.
Okay.
Thank you,
Chair. Civilian Secretariat could start.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Joe. Good morning to members of the committee. And good morning to the Secretary of the Civilian Secretariat, Mr. Rapea, and his team. We appreciate this moment that the portfolio has given us to come and make a presentation. As I said, the minister sent his apologies for not being able to join us because of other urgent matters that he must attend to. But we have the full team here. We'll be able to make the presentation and take any question that will arise. We are here to account to you with regard to how we have conducted our affairs in the fourth quarter, which will be for 2019-20, and the first quarter report for 2020-2021. But we will present them separately as it is supposed to be. I will not take much time and request the Secretary, Mr. Rapea, to lead in the presentation together with his team, if you may permit, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. Honourable members, we'll do quarter four presentation, and then we'll do quarter one presentation, and then I'll take questions. You may proceed.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, honorable members, honorable chairperson. I just want to introduce my team, but before that, I just want to indicate that Mr. Ramaru, the Chief Director, Civilian Oversight, Monitoring and Evaluation, is busy with exams. So he has tendered his apology and has sent Ms. Florence Matoma to represent his unit. I am with Advocate Don Bell, who is the Chief Director of Legislation. Ms. Lindy Wemjeza, who is the Director Internal Audit. Ms. Bilkis Omar, who is the Chief Director for Policy and Research. Mr. Benjamin Dooley, who is the Chief Director Partnership. Ms. Dipsy Wechemang, the Chief Director Corporate Services. Mr. Ntumelo Nkonjwana, the Chief Financial Officer, and Ms. Itumeleng Moahi, who is the Director of Strategic Planning, and she's the one that is going to lead the presentation. And Mr. Samuel Seluka is our Director Information Technology. As the Deputy Minister has already indicated, it's the presentation for quarter four of the last financial year. But in presenting that, we will be also giving you the picture of our annual performance of the previous year. And we will also, in the first quarter of this financial year, also we will also brief you in terms of our procurement for the COVID-19 pandemic. I will now hand over to Ms. Itumeleng Moahi to lead with the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, Secretary and colleagues. As the Secretary indicated, I will start with the quarter four presentation.
All right, you may continue. Honorable members, I've lost sound. Do you have sound?
Okay. Thank you. In terms of the quarter four presentation for 2019-2020, the presentation, Chairperson, will focus on the background and purpose, the organizational environment, the program performance information, graphical representation of both our quarterly and annual performance institutionally, and our quarterly financial report. So the purpose of the presentation, as the Secretary had already indicated, is to outline our progress in terms of the implementation of our 2019 annual performance plan and to ensure that as a department we fully comply with the requirements of the TSMA and Chapter 5 of the Treasury Regulations in particular. So in terms of our organizational environment, Chairperson and Honourable Members, our vacancy rate, we started off with a baseline of 7.79% vacancy rate in quarter one, and we ended the year with the same vacancy rate of 7.79% at the end of quarter four. On our employment equity, the graph there illustrates that out of our 142 staff complement, there are two people in our department with disabilities, and this translates into a 1.41% rate. In terms of our gender differences, 76 out of our total staff complement comprises of females, and that translates into 54%, while 46% of our staff complement is comprised of males. And then in terms of our senior management echelon, so there are 50% female and 50% males that occupy this position, these positions. So moving on to program performance information, I will start with program one administration. Program one has three sub-programs. The first sub-program is on department management, which only has one output indicator. So on the number of joint consultative IPES Secretariat Forum meetings held per year, our annual targets were four, and this annual target was achieved with no deviation. Moving on to sub-program 1.2, corporate services. This sub-program also only had one output indicator, which is the vacancy rate of not more than 7% of the total post-establishment. Our annual target was not more than 7%, and our annual performance was 7.79%. So we had a variance of 0.79%. And the reason for this deviation was because of the three resignations that we had during the reporting period. So our strategy to overcome this area of underperformance is to prioritize and fill all the vacant funded posts. On sub-program 1.3, finance administration, the sub-program had four output indicators for 2019-20. The first one, percentage of payments made to creditors within 30 days. The annual target was 100%, and we achieved this target. Percentage of internal audit recommendations implemented. Our annual target was 100%, and we only achieved 81% of this target with a variance of 19%. The reason for this deviation was, although the sub-program had already outlined actions to address the internal audit recommendations, the consultative nature of the debt recoveries and developing the relevant public finance and administration policies led to delays in implementing those particular recommendations. On the percentage of external audit recommendations, our annual target was 100%, and this target was achieved. The last one, percentage of expenditure in relation to our allocated budget, our annual target was 98%. We achieved 96% of this target with a variance of 2%. And our low levels of spending in this regard is due to the vacant funded posts that have not yet been filled and unspent funds for office accommodation. So in terms of overcoming the underperformance for sub-program 1.3, we have outlined the following Chairperson, the timeliest implementation of our internal audit recommendations. The department would ensure that we fill the critical vacant funded posts, and we would also speed up the process of acquiring our office space. You will notice, Chairperson and honourable members, the graphical representation of our Program 1 performance. Program 1 only achieved 50% of its planned targets at the end of the financial year. The level of performance has increased slightly when we compare this with the performance of the same quarter of the previous financial year, which was 43%. I won't repeat the reasons for the low level of performance, as these have already been highlighted. Moving on now to Program 2, Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships. This program has two sub-programs. The first sub-program is on intergovernmental civil society and public-private partnerships. And this sub-program had 6 output indicators for 2019-20. On the number of memoranda of understanding signed with stakeholders per year to build safe for communities, our annual target was 2, and this target was achieved. The number of workshops facilitated with our provincial counterparts and municipalities on the establishment of CSF, the annual target was 9. There was an achievement of 14, so there was an overachievement of 5 workshops, and the reason for this is the high demand that we experience for those CSF workshops in provinces and municipalities. The number of provincial capacity building sessions held on crime prevention policies here, our annual target was 4, and we achieved 11, so there was an overachievement of 7, and the reason was that the unit had to respond to levels of violence in the education environment, including also responding to additional requests relating to capacity building on crime prevention policies in provinces. On slide 12, the number of partnership strategies approved by the Secretary, our annual target was 1, this target was achieved. On the number of anti-crime campaigns conducted per year, the annual target was 3, we achieved 8, so there was an overachievement of 5. And the reason was that the department conducted these additional campaigns in response to crime in the learning environment, as I previously mentioned, and the high level of crime in the Western Cape province. The last one, the number of monitoring reports on the implementation of CPF regulations and standards, the annual target was 2, and this target was achieved. So subprogram 2.1 achieved all of its planned targets for the year. In terms of the activities that were undertaken during quarter 4 by the sub-program, this includes the anti-crime campaigns as indicated in the Limpopo province and in Gauteng province in collaboration with TVET colleges, with a particular focus on addressing the issue of gender-based violence in the learning environment. The department also finalized its MOU with the Congress of Traditional Leaders and Big Brands Media Holdings in an effort to help fight crime and promote safety in communities. The number of CSF workshops were also held in the Western Cape province and in the Northern Cape province. And the sub-program also conducted a capacity building workshop in the Western Cape province aimed at building capacity in terms of crime prevention policies. Moving on to sub-program 2.2, community outreach. This sub-program only had 1 output indicator, the number of Izimbizo or public participation programs held with communities. Our annual target was 8. The sub-program achieved 15, so there was an overachievement of 7. Given that the unit had to respond to additional requests emanating from Minister's Program of Action. So in terms of the activities carried out by this sub-program, this includes a number of Izimbizo that were carried out in the Northern Cape, in the Eastern Cape, and in Gauteng province, respectively. On the graphical representation of Program 2 performance, as previously indicated, Program 2 achieved all of its planned targets for the year. And the outstanding targets include The achievement of all these targets includes those targets that had not been achieved in quarter two of 2019-20. As you will see represented in the graph, that in quarter two we had a performance level of 71%, but the sub-program managed to make up for this underperformance at the end of the financial year. Chairperson, moving on to program three, legislation and policy development. This program has two sub-programs. The first one, policy development and research. Policy development and research had three output indicators for 2019-20. The first one is the number of policies on policing submitted to the Secretary for Police Service. The annual target was 2, and this target was achieved. The number of research reports on policing approved by the Secretary, the annual target was 2. And the unit achieved 3, so there was an overachievement of 1. This was based on the development of a roadmap to facilitate the implementation of policy proposals on the white paper on safety and security. And this was in response to the President's pronouncement on reducing violent crime by 50%. And it also emanated from the recommendations of Ministers Powell Summit on Crime and Violence Prevention. The last output indicator, number of newsletters or gazettes published on safer spaces. The annual target was 1, and this target was achieved. So the sub-program achieved all of its set targets. In terms of the progress reported by policy development and research, the e-policing policy framework was completed and approved by the Secretary for Police Service in January 2019. The draft integrated crime and violence prevention strategy was also approved by the Secretary at the end of the financial year for further consultation. In terms of research, the following studies were undertaken, examining the effectiveness of such discipline management of policing, and the study was finalized and approved at the end of the financial year. Examining the effectiveness of SAP's basic training program on service delivery. This report was also finalized and approved by the Secretary at the end of the financial year. I indicated that the sub-program also developed a roadmap for facilitating implementation of the white paper on safety and security. So this roadmap was also developed in August 2019. The department also held extensive engagements in terms of this roadmap in collaboration with our provincial counterparts. And the aim was to set out the approach in terms of implementation and to identify those vertical areas that have been prioritized for implementation. On knowledge management and knowledge and information management, the Safer Spaces Gazette was also completed and approved at the end of the financial year. Moving on to sub-program 3.2, the sub-program only had one output indicator, which is the number of bills submitted to Minister for approval. The annual target was 2, and the sub-program achieved 4, so there was an overachievement of 2. And this was based on the request from Minister to prioritize the FAPS Act amendment bill. And in addition to that, the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities Amendment Bill was prioritized as part of the 2020 legislative program. So the drafting of the bill was therefore fast-tracked. In terms of the progress made on the number of bills and regulations that the sub-program is busy with, Chairperson, there were 9 bills and regulations that the sub-program had been working on during the financial year. The first one, the Secondhand Goods Amendment Bill. In terms of this bill, it was presented to the executive authority for approval for it to be further processed within the relevant JCPS cluster structures. The SAIS report was also finalized in consultation with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. And then the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor also provisionally certified the bill, pending those comments that emanated from the cluster structures. On the Podkatara Amendment Bill, the bill was also presented to the Executive Authority, who approved the bill for further processing. The bill was also provisionally certified by the Chief State Law Advisor at the end of the financial year. On the SAPS Act Amendment Bill, the amendment bill was approved by the JCPS Minister cluster for further processing to Cabinet, or the Cabinet Committee rather, in order for Cabinet to approve the publishing of the bill in the Gazette, which Chairperson and Honourable Members will see has now taken place. The documentation that was required for this processing was submitted to Ministry for distribution to the Cabinet members. On the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, the bill was presented to and approved by the JCPS Development Committee for submission to the DG's cluster, and the amendment bill was set to be submitted to the next sitting of the DG's cluster, which has already taken place. On the Controlled Animals and Animal Products Bill, the bill was presented to the Executive Authority. Some concerns were raised about some of the gaps that were identified in the bill, and the sub-program has been working to address those concerns, and the bill was presented to the Minister for approval for further processing to the JCPS Development Committee. On the IPED Amendment Bill, on the 24th of March, the amendment bill was discussed at the IPED Secretariat Consultative Forum, and proposals were made regarding how to proceed with the drafting of the bill. The Consultative Forum then resolved to establish a drafting team from both the IPED and Secretariat, and a project plan was also developed in this regard. On the Regulation of Gatherings Amendment Bill, the review of the Act is going ahead, is proceeding. So a draft discussion paper is being developed for further interdepartmental consultation. The sub-program is also currently busy with comparative research to inform the bill. On the amendment to the Firearms Control Act regulations, these were published in the Gazette on the 9th of March. On the amendments to the South African Police Service Act, the DNA regulations in particular, a new set of regulations have been made under Section 15A of the SAPS Act, the current SAPS Act 1995, which repeals and substitutes the 2015 regulations regarding any DNA-related matters. And these have been promulgated through publication in the Gazette at the end of the financial year. So in terms of the graphical representation of Program 3 performance, Program 3 achieved all of its planned targets at the end of the financial year, and the program sustained the same level of performance as the previous financial year. Chairperson, now moving on to Program 4, Civilian Oversight, Monitoring and Evaluation. This program has two sub-programs. First one, Police Performance, Conduct and Compliance Monitoring, had 9 output indicators for the financial year. The first one, the number of SAPS oversight reports approved by the Secretary. The annual target was 2. Our annual performance was 2. On the SAPS trend analysis reports approved by the Secretary, our annual target was 1, and this target was achieved. On the SAPS budget and program performance assessment report, the annual target was 1, and it was also achieved. On the assessments report on complaint management, the annual target was 2, and this target was also achieved. On the number of reports on SAPS, on the implementation of IPED recommendations by SAPS, the annual target was 2, and this target was achieved. On the monitoring reports on compliance and implementation of the Domestic Violence Act, the annual target was 2, and this target was achieved. The number of reports on the implementation of and compliance to legislation and policies, our annual target was 1, and the annual performance was 1. And the number of assessment reports on litigation management, the annual target was 1, and this target was achieved. The last one on the reports on the functioning of the National Forensic DNA database, the annual target was 4, and this target was achieved. So the sub-program achieved all of its planned targets for the financial year. Chairperson, with your permission, I won't go into too much detail in terms of the activities that were undertaken, maybe just to highlight the ones that are related to gender-based violence. So the sub-program conducted an assessment of the implementation of the SOMA Act, Sexual Offences and Related Matters, and the assessment was aimed to verify the effectiveness of the implementation of the Act, with a particular emphasis on the SCS unit. And this study was done in response to the pronouncement made by the President in the 2019 State of the Nation address, about eradicating violent crime and in particular gender-based violence, which was happening or is still happening at a very high rate in the country. Moving on now to sub-program 4.2, policy and program evaluations. The sub-program had two output indicators. The number of assessment reports on compliance and effectiveness of the Central Firearms Registry, the annual target was one, and the target was achieved. The number of evaluation reports on the implementation of the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Act, the annual target was one, and this target was achieved. So in terms of program four performance, the program achieved all of its planned targets for the financial year. Chairperson, in terms of our quarterly institutional performance, we did achieve 85% of our planned targets at the end of quarter four. And the performance of the department in quarter four is not unusually high when we compare it with the same quarter of 2018-19. The performance of the fourth quarter in that year was 83%, so there has been a slight improvement of 2%. Our annual performance for 2019, the graph indicates that we have achieved 86% of our planned targets for 2019-20. Our level of performance is 14% lower than what we had anticipated, 100% of our planned targets. However, there has been a significant improvement in terms of our performance when comparing it to 2018-19, which was 78%. Jefferson, now moving on to the quarterly financial report. This is a breakdown of our program expenditure in terms of our original allocation of 146.6 million. That budget was then adjusted to 143 million. And at the end of the financial year, as indicated, 96.3% of that adjusted budget. And then, in terms of expenditure per economic classification, this indicates, I think, Chairperson, here I will only, in the interest of time, focus on compensation of employees and goods and services. So in terms of compensation of employees, we had an original budget of 104.8 million. This budget was adjusted downwards to 100 million. And as at the end of the financial year, we had spent 97.2% of our compensation of employees budget. And in terms of goods and services, we had an original allocation of 39.8 million. And this was adjusted downward by a very marginal rate. However, at the end of the financial year, we had spent 95.1% of our goods and services budget. So this translates to 96.3% of our expenditure of our adjusted budget. So the narrative that you will see on the last slide, Chairperson, it just basically reiterates what I have explained. So the low levels of expenditure was mainly due to underspending due to incomplete ICT projects and in terms of those vacant funded posts that had not been filled at the time of reporting. Chairperson, that brings me to the end of the quarter four performance report. With your permission, I will then now move on to quarter one performance report for 2020-2021.
Before you move on to the next report, Deputy Minister, is there anything you would like to add before I take quarter one?
Okay.
No. I think we are covered with the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
We can move to quarter one now.
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Deputy Minister. Chairperson and honourable members, it indicates that the reporting on the first quarter is in accordance with the annual performance plan that you had approved in April. We were instructed by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation to report on this particular APP and not the one that was reviewed in June. This was based on the fact that at the time of reviewing, the first quarter of the financial year had already taken place, and we have already executed those things that we had committed to in that APP. We were also advised by DPME that we should report on financial and non-financial performance in relation to our COVID-19 intervention. So this first quarter report also includes that particular information. The presentation focuses on background and purpose, the organizational environment, program performance information, graphical representation of our quarterly performance, progress on our COVID-19 intervention, and the quarterly financial report. As indicated, Chairperson and Honourable Members, the purpose of this particular report is to provide information in terms of...
Honourable, my apologies. In accordance my apologies.
To improve transparency and oversight over financial and non-financial
for the interruption.
Program performance, but also in terms of how we responded to COVID.
Sorry for the interruption. We have a very bad
environment. The graph there indicates that of our...
My apologies. We have a very bad
establishment. We have filled 142. Which again results in a vacancy rate of 7.79%.
So the tell me to stop. They are trying to talk to her.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Rapia, can you switch off your mic? I'm trying to get a better sound. Members are complaining that the sound is not very good. Mr. Rapia, is just your mic that's on?
Yes, Chairperson.
Can we try again? You can continue with the presentation. Yeah. Let's try again. Your sound is very bad.
Chair, I ask that they switch off the mics of any other gadget that is open in their vicinity and just leave the one that they are using for presentation.
Please, DM, because there's an echo on the sound and we can't hear properly.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's try again.
All right. We will do that. Thank you.
And then? It's fine.
You can continue now.
Honorable members, am I audible now?
Yes. You are
to me. Yes, you are.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure if I'm required to start from the beginning of this presentation, or should I just continue from slide 3?
No, you must continue, and you have until 10 o'clock to do the presentation so that we can ask questions.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Okay, on slide 3, I was just indicating that in terms of our vacancy rate, we maintain the same vacancy rate of 7.79%, and this is also the same vacancy rate that we had in the same quarter of the previous financial year. In terms of employment equity, of our 142 staff members, there are 2 staff members with disabilities, which translates into 1.41%. And then in terms of our gender differences, our staff complement comprises of 54% females and 46% males. And on the senior management echelon, females occupy 46% of SMS positions, while males occupy 54%. Moving on to program performance information. On program 1, sub-program 1.1 had 1 output indicator, which is the number of joint consultative IPID secretariat forum meetings. The quarterly target was 1, and this target was achieved with no deviation. On slide 7, sub-program 1.2, corporate services. Corporate services has 2 sub-programs. My apologies. Corporate services has 3 output indicators for quarter 1. The first one is maintain a vacancy rate of not more than 7%. Our quarterly target was not more than 7%. The actual output was 7.79%, as indicated, with a variance of 0.79%. So the reason for this deviation was, although we had appointed three people during quarter one, during the same period, there were also three exits by way of one retirement and interdepartmental transfers. So our corrective measure here would be prioritizing and filling those vacant funded posts, and also ensuring the continuous implementation of our recruitment strategy. On the percentage implementation of the human capital strategy, our quarterly target was 10%. We achieved 16%, and there was an overachievement of 6%. So the reason for this deviation, Chairperson and honorable members, was during the quarter under review, minimal operational activities such as training, development, and wellness programs were carried out due to the disruption of our normal service delivery interventions based on the COVID-19 lockdown. So as a result, we paid more attention to developing the relevant policies and strategies, which resulted in the overachievement. The last one for sub-program 1.2, percentage implementation of the ICT strategy, the quarterly target was 10%. We achieved 25%, so there was an overachievement of 15%. And the reason for this deviation is that due to the nationwide lockdown, all the communication tools that had been planned to have been implemented at a later stage in the financial year had to be implemented earlier than anticipated, such as the use of MS Teams and other virtual meeting platforms. So the sub-program achieved two of its three planned targets for quarter one. On finance administration, the sub-program had two output indicators. The percentage of payments made to creditors within 30 days, our quarterly target was 100%, and this target was achieved. On the percentage of expenditure in relation to the budget allocation, our quarterly target was 20%, and we achieved 18% with a variance of 2%. So the low level of spending was also due to the implications of the nationwide lockdown, and our main cost drivers were affected, including but not limited to spending on travel and subsistence, catering, venues and facilities, as well as other line items such as stationery and printing. So in line with the guidelines provided by Treasury, we reprioritized our budget and plans, and by doing so, we envisaging that we would spend a large part of our budget in the latter quarters of this financial year. In terms of graphical representation of Program 1 performance, Program 1 recorded a performance score of 67% at the end of quarter 1. And I had already indicated that the main reason for the low level of performance was due to the vacant funded posts, which had not been filled, and also the implications of the lockdown on our main cost drivers when it comes to the expenditure in relation to our allocated budget. Moving on to Program 2, Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships. This program had two sub-programs. So on intergovernmental, civil society, and public-private partnerships, the sub-program has five output indicators for this financial year. The number of MOUs signed with stakeholders per year, they did not have a quarterly target for quarter one. On the number of workshops facilitated with our provincial counterparts and municipalities on establishing CSFs, the quarterly target was two. This target could not be achieved, so there was a variance of two. So the sub-program tried to utilize alternative platforms to conduct these workshops, such as MS Teams and other virtual platforms. So however, there was a unusually low level of attendance due to connectivity failures as the sub-program tried to utilize a virtual beaming to conduct these workshops. So in terms of our corrective measures, the sub-program will continue to engage with our IT to assist with any potential connectivity issues prior to these workshops. And now that the lockdown regulations have eased, The sub-program will also look at arranging face-to-face workshops of not more than 50 people per session to ensure continued compliance with COVID-19 regulations. On the provincial capacity building workshops held on crime prevention policies, the quarterly target was 2, and the sub-program only achieved 1 with a variance of 1. So the second planned workshop could not take place, also due to connectivity failures. And as indicated with the previous, the sub-program would also look at utilizing other web-based applications such as Zoom, Google Meetings, etc., to hold these workshops. On the anti-crime campaigns conducted and the monitoring reports on CPF regulations, there were no quarterly targets for quarter one. Sub-program 2.2 community outreach only had 1 output indicator, which is the number of Izimbizo and public participation programs. The quarterly target was 2. This target could not be achieved due to the restrictions on public gatherings and traveling. So there was a variance of 2. So our corrective measure here was to reduce the number of planned targets to 4 per annum, as per the guidelines that we received from the DPME on revising our budget and plans. So this has already taken place, Chairperson and Honourable Members. In terms of the activities undertaken during the quarter under review, I had indicated also that the sub-program conducted most of its work in terms of workshops and engagements with stakeholders virtually. So I won't go into detail in terms of those the meetings and workshops in the interest of time. I'll move on to slide 15. The graph there illustrates that program 2 could not achieve its planned targets for quarter 1. And this is due to those restrictions that were posed by the COVID-19 regulations. On program 3, legislation and policy development, this program has 2 sub-programs. So the first one, policy development and research, had 5 output indicators for quarter 1. The first one, the number of policing on... Okay, maybe I should just indicate, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that the sub-program did not have any planned targets for quarter 1, but they did carry out a number of preparatory work or preparatory activities in anticipation of implementing their targets for quarter 2 onwards. So on policy development, the draft integrated crime and violence prevention strategy was approved for consultation at the end of the previous financial year. So the sub-program has developed a consultation plan, and it is envisaged that these engagements will be conducted during this quarter towards the end of the financial year. And then in terms of the e-policing policy, the sub-program also developed a concept note for phase 2 of the project. In terms of research, the research unit or research sub-unit undertook a joint project with our provincial counterparts, focusing on analyzing murder case dockets from 2013-14 to 2017-18. And this includes conducting interviews with fast detectives and NPA prosecutors. So the sub-program carried out project scoping and undertook desktop research in order to develop the draft concept note for this project. And this was based on the fact that field work could not be carried out during the hard lockdown. So a concept note was also developed for facilitating the implementation of the 2016 White Paper on Safety and Security, the policy proposals contained therein. However, due to the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic, this project was subsequently removed from the 2020-2021 annual performance plan. It has been replaced by the development of research briefs on various topics that the subunit has undertaken on policing and crime. Sub-program 3.2 on legislation only had 1 output indicator, the number of bills submitted to Minister for Cabinet approval. So there was no quarterly targets for quarter 1 for the sub-program.
However, work has been ongoing in terms of the bills. So I will just touch briefly, Chairperson and Honourable Members, on the progress made on these bills. On the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, the bill was presented to the JCP SDGs cluster on the 11th of June. The DGs cluster then resolved that the bill may be further processed to the Ministers cluster. So at the time of reporting, Chairperson, the sub-program was awaiting further inputs from the DNC responsible for policing, and these have subsequently been received. On the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorists and Related Activities Amendment Bill, the Minister approved the submission of the bill to the JCPS Development Committee, and the bill was presented to this committee on the 25th of June. So it was resolved that the bill would be presented to the next JCPS DGs cluster, which has already taken place. On the Secondhand Goods Amendment Bill, inputs were received from our internal M&E unit in terms of the SAYS template that is required. So a meeting had been arranged with the relevant SAPS officials as well in July to discuss and expedite the process of obtaining inputs into the SAYS from SAPS, and this has also already taken place. On the SAPS Act Amendment Bill, the bill was presented to the JCPS Ministers Cluster in March, as previously indicated. The Ministers Cluster recommended that the bill should be submitted to the Cabinet Committee. The bill was then presented to the Cabinet Committee in June, who then required the JCPS Ministers to engage on certain aspects of the bill, which they found to be problematic. However, these aspects had already been addressed and engaged on during the drafting process of the bill, so it was resolved that this would be reported in the next JCPS Ministers Cluster, which was scheduled for the 10th of July. On the IPED Amendment Bill, the bill was identified as a priority bill for the 2021 legislative program from the Deputy President. So as I indicated in the Quarter 4 performance report, there was a drafting team that was compiled by members of CSP and IPED. So they have resumed the process of reviewing and redrafting the current version of the bill.
Ma'am, you have
also
10
a project
minutes.
Plan that is in
you
place,
have 10 minutes
the
to
time frames for development
Sorry?
Of the bill, including the introduction
you have
to Parliament at the end of 2021.
Sorry for interrupting
was also
you.
Submitted to both the Secretary for
My apologies for interrupting you.
ED of IPED for approval.
You have 10 minutes
Moving
to complete the
to
presentation.
For civilian oversight, monitoring, and evaluation.
You have 10 minutes to complete the presentation. Hello?
My apologies, Chairperson. I saw that I was muted. May I continue?
You have 10 minutes to complete the presentation.
Please no, continue. You must try to summarize the remaining 10 pages.
Okay, noted, Chairperson and Deputy Minister. Okay. In terms of sub-program 4.1, the first three output indicators did not have quarterly targets for quarter one, so I will move on to slide 21. On the number of assessment reports on complaints management, the quarterly target was one. This target could not be achieved due to delays in receiving the necessary data from SAPS. So our corrective measure would be to continue engaging with SAPS to ensure that they submit the required data timely. On the reports of SAPS implementation of IPED recommendations, that quarterly target was one and this target was achieved. On the monitoring reports on compliance and implementation of the DVA Act, the quarterly target was one and this target was achieved. On the reports on implementation and compliance to legislation and policy, there was no quarterly targets. The same with the assessment reports on police conduct and integrity. So the last one on assessment reports on the functioning of the National Forensic DNA Database, the quarterly target was one and this target was achieved. So the sub-program achieved three of its planned targets for quarter one. Chairperson, then in the interest of time, I won't go into too much detail in terms of the activities undertaken during the quarter under review. Suffice to say that for those quarterly targets that, for those indicators that did not have quarterly targets, there was a lot of preparatory work that was undertaken to prepare for quarter two onwards. So I will move on now to slide 25 on sub-program 4.2, policy and program evaluations. This sub-program, with its two output indicators, did not have quarterly targets for quarter one. However, similarly with sub-program 4.1, there was a number of preparatory activities that were undertaken. This includes the development of terms of reference for the evaluation of the DNA Act, which were revised, and the terms of reference for the assessment of the SAPS detective training were also drafted. So both of these terms of reference take into consideration limitations caused by COVID-19, with particular reference to limitations in terms of field work and data collection. So furthermore, data collection tools for these evaluations were drafted in preparation for the data collection process that is now currently taking place in this quarter. So in terms of program four performance, program four, the graph indicates that program four achieved 75% of its planned targets at the end of quarter one. So there is an increase when we compare it with the same quarter of 2019-20 of 75%. However, the program did not achieve all of its planned targets due to the implications of COVID-19 and also delays in receiving the required required data from SAPS. In terms of our institutional performance, Chairperson, the graph indicates that we achieved 54% of our planned targets for quarter one, and the current level of performance is 46% lower than what we had anticipated, which is 100% performance. However, there is a significant improvement by 12% when we compare it with quarter one of 2019-20, where the performance level was 42%. This illustrates that although we were impacted by COVID-19 and the lockdown regulations, we still remain committed to business continuity and performance. Chairperson, I had indicated that we were also required to report on progress on COVID-19 interventions. So at the time of reporting, we indicated to DPME that as a department, we don't necessarily undertake any externally focused COVID-19 interventions. So a lot of the interventions that you will see tabulated here were mainly internally focused, and that was focusing on protecting our employees from the risk of infection. So it entailed the procuring of personal protective equipment, transportation for our frontline workers, and the implementation of unified communication tools. So in terms of how much we spent on these interventions, at the end of quarter one, we had spent 121,583 on these interventions. Chairperson, I had already indicated that our COVID-19 interventions were internally focused, so I will just focus on the challenges that we encountered during implementation. So this was due to the overall increased demand of PPE across government. The procurement processes in this regard, in some instances, took longer than anticipated. And in these instances, we found that employees made use of their own personal funds to buy these items and then submitted claims for reimbursement to the department. Moving on to the quarterly financial report, Chairperson, our original allocation for 2020-21 was 156.3 million. This budget was adjusted downwards to 144.3 million. So as at the end of quarter one, we had spent 18.4% of our adjusted budget. On the economic classification, again, as previously, I will focus on compensation of employees and goods and services. So on compensation of employees, our original budget was 112 million. It was adjusted downwards to 110 million. And at the end of quarter one, we had spent 21.8% of this budget. on goods and services, our original allocation was 42 million. It was adjusted downwards to 31.8 million. And as at the end of quarter one, we had spent only 6.1% of our goods and services budget. So the narrative that you see reflected on slide 33, Chairperson and Honourable Members, just explains what I had, what I've just indicated. So the underspending was mainly due to the compensation of employees, vacant funded posts that had not yet been filled, and delays in implementing the annual cost of living salary adjustment. And then in terms of the low levels of spending on goods and services, this was due to the impact of COVID-19 and the slowdown in our normal business activities. So as indicated, our cost drivers such as traveling, venues and catering were mainly impacted, hence the low levels of spending. That brings me to the end of the presentation, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was quite some hard work, an hour of presentations. Honourable Members, I saw that Honourable Sheikh Imam says that he's in two meetings. I've requested some advice on this, where members attend two meetings simultaneously. It's a bit difficult because are you able to record your presence at two meetings? I think we need to get advice on that. I don't want to be told that, in fact, your members were sitting in your house when they told you they were in police. So we'll have that sorted out quite soon. Honourable Members, I'll take hands for questions. Honourable Groenewald has also sent an apology. I don't see any hands. Could you give me hands, please? Indicate if you want to speak.
I've indicated, Chairperson.
Chairperson, can the screen be removed, please?
Can the screen please be removed? So it's Ter Blanche, Shembeni. What field are you on?
Sheikh Imam, Chair.
Sheikh Imam. Any other hands? I'll start with Honourable Ter Blanche, Shembeni, and then Sheikh Imam.
May I start, Chairperson?
Yes, you may.
And Molekwa.
Honourable Molekwa as well. Honourable Ter Blanche, you may start.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, this department, you know, they have the history of underspending and specifically on vacant posts.
Honourable Ter Blanche, can you show us your face, please?
Chairperson, I said that, you know, the department has got a history of underspending on, you know, on vacant posts and accommodation. And I really, you know, I mean, this is going on forever now. And I was just wondering whether they can indicate to us how they are going to finally sort this out. I mean, if you can't even fill your own posts, then I have a problem with that. Chairperson, then secondly, there is a misalignment between the performance of the department and the allocated budget and the expenditure. And that needs to be explained in more detail because obviously that doesn't make sense. So I need an explanation on that, Chairperson. Chairperson, and then also very good work was done by certain areas of this department, and I think I want to commend them on that. For instance, they drafted integrated crime and violence prevention strategy And I think that is exactly what we need in this circumstances. And my question is whether this draft policy have been implemented, and if so, what is the outcome of that? Chairperson, and then lastly, the same question also about basic training program. We have serious problems with the police's performance at the moment. And my question is, to what extent is this new policy, basic training-wise, been implemented, and what impact is it having on service delivery of the police? Thank you, Chairperson, for now.
Thank you, Honorable Tablanche. Honorable members, could you please mute your mics once you've spoken? Deputy Minister, your mic is on. Molekwa, your mic is on. Molekwa, your mic is still on. Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is about the filling of post, yes. I see from quarter four, quarter one, 2020-2021, the filling of posts is still the same. Posts are not filled. 12 posts that are vacant there, they must be filled. Or either we can find exactly the question, why are these posts not filled? Number two, I want to come to the so-called the police conduct. It's saddening to see what is happening in our country, to say police are being undermined and nothing is being done. If you may look at this Senegal case, whereby police vehicles have to be banned, now meaning that the police have got to run away from our civilians. I don't understand it. Who must take charge? Is it the community or the police? And then if the police cannot do anything, I think this thing, the crime is getting out of hand. So I think then the civilian secretariat, as they are monitoring the functioning of the South African Police Service, I think they must give us an answer into this one. What is happening? Now, checking into the gender-based violence cases, the South African Police Service mentioned that they've got 321 officers, something like that, in training for FCS. But to me, it does not sound well, because I'm looking as to how many FCS units do we have in the country. So does the 321 make any impact in South Africa during this period whereby we have such a high number of gender-based violence and femicide crimes being committed? 321 members, it's almost nothing. If we can look maybe at Gauteng or Western Cape, how many units, FCS units, are they having there? So the 321 members are making absolutely nothing. So something must be done here. That's why I say, does these 321 members make any impact in the investigation of these serious crimes in South Africa? Lastly, I will go to the vacancy rate. The staff with disability is said to be two. We don't have the target as to how many members with disability must we have in that department. Can the department elaborate on that one? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shembeni. Honorable Shekima.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for that opportunity. Yeah, it's very difficult, particularly, Chair, when it's smaller parties, and particularly when you talk about times like this, when you're dealing with budgets. and things like that. You know, that we have to go from one place to the other to be able to do justice to our positions. But yeah, but coming back to this, you know, I'd like an explanation, and particularly on the targets that are set, the performance and the budget that is allocated, because what we don't see in practice, you know, in theory, yes, indeed, there's budget set aside for these purposes, the targets that are set, the performance, and yes, we do a very good job in terms of spending the entire budget. But when it comes to the actual performance, and, you know, the indicators does not give us a clear indication of what reality is on the ground. And let us be honest about it. What we see on the ground, what our people experience on the ground, is something completely different to the figures that we get here at the moment. And particularly to the civilian secretariat, my question is, I mean, the various challenges that we have in the police stations, on officers, the premises, the stuff to entertain gender-based violence cases and things, you know, and the numerous complaints that we get of the attitude of at the stations when people go there. These are some of the things, the targets that are set, the performance and the indicators that we are getting, that don't give us a clear picture of exactly what is going on. So I'd like to be advised or guided as to how do you measure these things to see that the money that we're actually spending, we're getting value, it's making a difference on the ground. Thus far, I can tell you, I don't see that. Now, the other thing is that we've requested previously from various structures in South African police services to give us a comprehensive breakdown on money that was spent during COVID-19 for PPEs. Hey, let me re-explain this again. In detail on each item, and not the total amount spent on item, but per price of each item of PPE, who the contractors were, who the directors and things, we requested that comprehensive breakdown, and what we got was not what we actually looked for and what we actually wanted. So I'd like us to tell when would we be able to get that complete breakdown. Now, I'm not sure if this one falls under you or not, but since you deal with the issues of gender-based violence as well, there is repeated reports, particularly in the media, and I've had some calls last night as well, where apparently there were motor vehicles that were donated for gender-based violence specifically. Maybe if you can tell us if you know anything about it, whether you've engaged social development or whoever it is, because obviously I would think that if they were allocated, then they should be allocated to SOSFs and particularly organizations like yourself to be able to make good use of them. Now, can you tell us what is the impact COVID-19 has had on you, having your workshops and training sessions for the different people and different officers in your units? Now, finally, I want to say there appears to be a serious problem in terms of vacancies, and most departments appear to be having this problem as far as vacancies. What do you believe is the problem in terms of vacancies in under your units? Is it the lack of capacity? Is it the skills? Is it an issue of the qualifications that people have? Is there something you should be speaking to tertiary institutions to speak specifically for your needs in the future? Because remember that if you're not going to address that through tertiary institutions, you're going to run into a serious problem at some stage where there's not going to be enough capacity to employ in any event, because as we know right now, many of the skilled people are leaving the country at this point in time. And are you also considering those that might have gone into early retirement and things and may have had the necessary skills that you might be able to recruit? I'll stop there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Molekwa, and then Meshu.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me start by appreciating the presentation made by department, especially the CSPS. I want to congratulate them also because of the performance, especially on the fourth quarter, Chairperson. But my question is on the internal audit recommendation. I do understand that there was a plan in place to implement the recommendation by the Internal Audit Committee. However, there was a delay due to the process of consultation. So my question is that, is there any plan or mechanism in place to fast track the implementation of the recommendation of the Internal Audit Committee, Chairperson? My second question is on the first quarter report. Chairperson, we do understand that the COVID-19 had a negative impact on most of the programs. But however, Chairperson, especially on program 4, they said only 3 sub-programs were performed. So I just want to check with the department that is there any plan in place in order to make sure that those programs that were not achieved are implemented, especially in the current situation where the country is faced with a serious crime. So I just want to check if there is a plan in place, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Molekwa. Honorable Meshu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask 2 questions. Some of my questions have been covered. But the first one has to do with vacancy that a number of members have raised, concerns about vacancies. And what I specifically want to know about vacancies is, how is the staff morale in the secretariat? When you have a person going into the department and then with less than 2 years they go into retirement, there could be something, I think, that is making them to leave early. So I want, maybe it has to do with the staff morale, I'm not sure. That's why I want to know, how is the staff morale? And again, when staff members choose to be moved or to be transferred from one department to the other, in a number of occasions it's because of being unhappy where they are. So if I can get clarity on how the staff morale is within the secretariat. And secondly, a study was made, we're told, on police living quarters. Now, I want to request for some elaboration. What were the findings of the study, particularly when it comes to issues of security and also cleanliness? In some quarters, we have seen dilapidation that is very, very concerning. So I would want to know, out of this study, how did they find the living quarters? Are they suitable or are they not unsuitable? Are there any recommendations for renovations or not? I need a clarity on this issue of the condition of police living quarters. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. You have an opportunity now to answer that set of questions. Again, would you like to introduce?
Thank you very much. I'll ask the secretary to lead the processes of responding. Thank you.
Thank you. You may start.
Thank you very much. Thank you, DM, and thank you.
Could we have your picture, please? The meeting is recorded live. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will respond to some of the questions, and then my colleagues will deal with some of the questions. With regard to underspending on funded posts, maybe I might just deal with that. In terms of the DTSA target, the standard is that you shouldn't have more than the 10% of your the department vacant. So you mustn't have more than 10% vacancy. But what we have realized that because we are a small department, we actually put our targets higher than the 10%, which is allowable in terms of the DPSA 10%. And we put our target at 7% to try to make sure that we increase the spending. However, as you are filling in posts, others are exiting. In my 30 years in the human resource management, you will never have 100% positions filled. It's the pace at which you fill in those posts as they get vacant. And I think that's the issue that on our side, we're trying to make sure that we fast track that pace. As it stands now in this quarter, the vacancy level is sitting at 6.45. So we are trying our best to make sure that as people leave, because in the public service, you'll find that, for instance, we are competing to get very good, competent senior managers who are women. They will always be moved. Because they will be appointed in other departments for promotional positions into SMS. And when you look in terms of the people that are leaving, they are not leaving to the private sector. Most of them, they end up in the public service. The issue of accommodation, it's something that is beyond our control. Where we are in currently, it's not conducive, and I think it's also even an impact in terms of the morale of our employees. I can indicate that the morale is not that great. We are overcrowded where we are sitting, but it's Public Works, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, which is responsible for organizing our accommodation. There was an accommodation that was allocated to us, but when the new administration came into place, arts and culture and sports were merged. So they had to move sports to the building that we were allocated because we were going to share with arts and culture. And we had to start the process from scratch, and the process has advanced as I'm speaking, that the tender process with the Public Works, they are in the process of final adjudication of the building. The other issue in terms of the misalignment on the spending and also the performance, which is another question that has been raised. It's if you look in terms of our performance, we have achieved 86%, improving from the previous year at 78%, but as we said, the issue about expenditure is the pace at which you fill in positions when they become vacant. You will find that people who are leaving during the year, they might have already delivered the work that they are supposed to deliver. But also, the issue of accommodation, if you are not spending, because we were given about 6 million to spend on accommodation because we need to increase that. And we only spent in the current building about 3-4 million. So it's the 2 million. And if you look into the 2 million differential, in terms of our budget, it's a huge amount. Rather than if you are looking into a department that doesn't have the number of people like us. So that's why you will you will find that misalignment. The integrated crime prevention strategy, as we indicated, we have the draft that has been developed. And in the State of Nation address, the president said that the strategy which must be consulted extensively. So the minister has approved that we go on the consultation process, which we are busy with as we speak. We haven't started its implementation. This strategy came as a result of the review of the White Paper on Safety and Security and the National Crime Prevention Strategy. So once that consultation has been completed, the strategy will be approved, and it's a strategy that has to be approved by cabinet, and our intention is that it will be approved in this financial year. Ms. Omar will deal with the issue about the basic training, because it's the study that we have done, which we were looking into the basic training of police. The issue of police being undermined, the Senegal issue, it's a matter which is a concern to us. And it's an issue that we will have to do an assessment from where we sit, what is happening there. So far, we haven't done that assessment, but it has got a number of permutations. It's being proactive through intelligence gathering, that you will know that the people are planning to be violent and you are ready for it. It also has to do with if you had enough people that are supposed to, especially your POP unit, if they are there, in terms of the response, so did they respond effectively in terms of how they have been trained? It's an issue that we will look into it now that the members feel that it's a matter that needs to be addressed. I'll ask Ms. Matoma to deal with the issue about the GBV cases. I'm not understanding in terms of the number, this 321 members, maybe she'll be able to address that. Staff with disability, it's two, what is the target? If we have three staff members with disability, it gives us 2%, which is the national target. So we are only looking into appointing another person with disability, and then we will meet the national target. On the issue of the impact, I will ask Ms. Omar, or also from M&E, in terms of the work that they are doing, which goes into impact. If you look into the issue of the detectives, they like Ms. Omar is going to do an assessment in terms of the dockets, murder dockets. That's where we link up in terms of our impact. So they will deal with that. On the issue of the vehicles for GBV, we are not aware of this issue. Although we are part of the task team that deals with GBV, but on the issue of the vehicles, we don't know who has been allocated those vehicles. Ms. Wechomang will deal with the issue of the COVID, what impact it had on the department. But as you can see in terms of the presentation that we made, there are units that actually didn't achieve anything. They had zero achievement, like your Izimbizo in terms of community participation. We achieved zero during that quarter, so it had a serious impact on the department. But Ms. Wechiomang will deal with that. With regard to the internal audit recommendation, Ms. Njeza, the director, internal audit will deal with that. Regarding those areas that were not achieved, yes, we have a plan. If you recall, we made an amended an addendum to our APP, which we presented to the portfolio committee, which says that some of the areas we know we are not going to achieve for this year. However, we are using alternative service delivery methods, like online, as we have already even started with the GBV program, which we had on the television in a program. And lastly, Ms. Matoma will also deal with the issue of the police living quarters study. I just want Honorable Meshe raise the issue about somebody who retires within 2 years. Maybe it's not meaning that the person has worked 2 years and retire, but somebody resigning. And Ms. Wechiomang will explain that in terms of exit interviews that they perform, in terms of what are the some of the reasons that people state for exit. Thank you. Ms. Omar will respond to those questions, followed by
Thank you very much. Before the rest of you respond, could I ask that you keep your responses focused and to the point and concise? You are taking very long with responses. Ms. Omar?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair and members and Deputy Minister. Chair, in terms of the question,
your sound is very bad. Sorry. My apologies. My apologies. My apologies. Your sound is very bad.
So in terms of that, the study was very welcome. It was she was very positive about the findings and wants to implement even.
Raise the issue
about further engagement.
Ms. Omar, we have lost your sound.
Program herself through her unit. So because it's a new project, I can't answer the question on impact of that. The Secretary has spoken about the integrated crime and violence prevention strategy. Maybe just to add to that was that last year we had intended, because we are not implementers of the strategy, but it's a whole of government and whole of society approach, and we're finalizing, like you said, the consultation process. We had developed a roadmap, as you would see from the last quarter four presentation, that the roadmap entailed us going and assisting two provinces implementing the strategy. But because of the COVID-19 pandemic, we were unable to travel, so we haven't, but we will be picking up on this. So basically, we will be facilitating the implementation of the strategy. In terms of the question on our impact on our performance, a general question, so over the years, we have produced a lot of research and policies which we know SAPS has been using. For example, in 2018, we finalized the police resource allocation research project, where we found that a large percentage of members at police station level are sitting in management and administrative posts. So we know that SAPS is re-looking at that whole configuration of the deployment of members in terms of police stations, because you would need more Bobby on the beat. Similarly, our state of policing report as well, we know that SAPS is using that report as well to look at the internal transformation processes. So in terms of impact on society directly, I think we have an indirect impact, because our recommendations tend to want to professionalize SAPS. And if SAPS is using our recommendations to professionalize, we do have a direct impact on society then. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next. Who's next?
Sagar-san.
Thank you.
You have an echo.
Can I continue?
Yeah, I can go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and Deputy Minister, our Secretary. On the issue of the FCS, the number that we have in terms of the total number of FCS, what we have is 183 FCS units in the country. But to come back to the issue of the capacity, whether there is an impact, what we have found is that for now, there is some impact that the FCS unit are doing, and the FCS are doing a good job, and they are dedicated and have contributed to the improved conviction rate with regard to the gender-based violence. And the main challenge, as we can say, is the lack of resources, especially the human resources, as you have indicated. But what we can do now is to engage with staffs and make sure that there is enough capacity that is given to the FCS unit. But what they are doing in terms of the work, they are doing a good job, and we think that they will continue to do so in terms of the improving the conviction rates. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nick?
Thank you, Chair.
We cannot hear anybody. There's no sound. Could I please see a face, and could I have sound, please?
Okay, she's unmuting, Chairperson. Sorry about that.
Could we have a face as well, please?
Your face. Okay, thanks. Yeah, fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nikki Wichuman. I'm the Chief Director of Corporate Services. I'd like to comment on the...
We cannot hear you. Your sound is very bad. Mr. Rapia, we have lost your person.
Secretary, are you not able to come in?
Do we have another person who can respond in the meantime, please?
Secretary, can you unmute? Secretary.
She's going to use another laptop.
Mr. Rabia, could someone else answer in the meantime, please?
I'm connected now, Chair. All right. My name is Dixie Wachimang. I'm commenting on the COVID-19 impact in the department. We
still had 11 sound
of COVID-19 and one death that we have not yet confirmed whether it was a COVID-19 related, because the person who passed on had was declared COVID-19, was declared that she was recovered. Now during the time when we have those 11 cases, there would be closure of the department for 1 or 2 days where we would be doing contact tracing and so forth, as well as compulsory isolation and quarantine of those people who might have come into contact with such a person. So that actually had an impact in terms of the time that we would have used maybe to implement some of the programs that we had on target, and based on that we would have not achieved in some of the things that we might have planned. And in terms of the partnership, I'll give over to Mr. Ntuli, who would also explain, because they have to have contact with their partners and stakeholders out there. And maybe you could explain better in terms of how it impacted on them.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, DM and honorable members. I think the colleague, like has indicated, by nature of partnerships, were an outreach-driven type of a unit. Therefore, most of our tasks or our programs were curtailed due to the lockdown in compliance with the what you call COVID-19 regulations. But like I think the Secretary had already indicated, we then had to also try and find out an alternative means, like leveraging on the ICT to say, how can we, and some of the izimbizo that we have had, we have already tried then to utilize the ICT means to communicate with the people out there. However, I must say indeed, it has impacted heavily on our program. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you done with your responses now?
Yeah, CFO is the last one to.
CFO?
Thank you, Chair. PM, another member, Secretary and colleague. My name is Tumaro Gojana, the Chief Financial Officer in the department. I'm the Chief Financial Officer in the department, and my name is Tumaro Gojana. I'm responding to the implementation of the internal audit recommendation. So what is being planned is to make sure that we implement them before the planned time of implementing it. The reason for this one is related to debt recovery. There was a change in policy by the National Treasury, whereby before we just used to write letters of demand to the affected individuals. But now, according to the new regulation of Treasury, is that we must first investigate before we actually demand the funds from the people. So in terms of the internal audit processes.
Colleague,
also, responding to matters related to the procurement of PPE,
technology involved is very bad today.
Confidently say that our prices are actually aligned to the prescribed national treasury prices. The only instances where we differed is when we bought our face mask, which was 10 rand more than the prescribed amount, because of the fact that we had to put an emblem on the cloth mask. But also, if you look at things like the 5 liters of sanitizer, the prescribed amount by national treasury is about 900 rand, and we as a department, we bought that at about 400 rand. So in terms of that will be the presentation in as far as the PPE is concerned. But also the suppliers from which we bought this item is mainly Black Run service providers, which are based here in Gauteng. The only instances where we have bought to different suppliers is when individuals had to procure for themselves because there was high demand. And then in that instance, people would have bought from Pick n Pay, Macro, and some pharmacies, and then we reinvest them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly on the Senegal matter, I must say, Chair, to members here that the Senegal matter is an unfortunate incident that happened and that should not have happened. But we are doing everything possible now with regard to the hearing that's going to take place on Friday. And we can assure members that we are ready. Honorable Shembeni said, is it the community that determines what happens? No, it's not going to happen that way. We are going to be in charge of the situation and will respond appropriately. It's unfortunate that what happened, and we really condemn the conduct of the people who were there calling themselves white farmers. We know they don't represent the farming community in South Africa, but their conduct was completely unacceptable and it cannot be tolerated by government, and an incident like that will not be allowed to happen moving forward. But we are making all the necessary arrangements, Chair, to deal with the situation on Friday. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dean. Honorable members, I'll take the last two or three questions if you still have outstanding questions. Any follow-up questions? Honorable Tablanche and Shembeni, and then Sheikh Imam. Those are the last questions. Tablanche, Shembeni, and then Sheikh Imam.
Chairperson, thank you. May I go ahead?
Yes, you may.
Chairperson, the National Treasury reported that this department has a headcount of 158. Whereas they indicated that they has 154 funded positions. Can they just maybe explain that difference for us, please, Chairperson? And then the last one, Chairperson, there is a serious problem with civil claims against the SAPS, and apparently they've done an assessment on that, and I just want to know what their findings are and what they're going to do to rectify the position. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Shembeni and then Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going back. It's a follow-up question on that one of the FCS units. What I've been saying is that the SAPS mentioned that they've got 321 officers on training up to so far now to beef up the FCS. We know that FCS is doing a very good job. But now, my concern is that FCS is understaffed. And a lot of members in one unit, I remember more than 8 members within a year have been transferred to other units like VSPOL, and of which I think something must be wrong there. The resourcing and everything, it must be up to standard. And we cannot take a year or so to make arrangements, turnaround strategy in this unit because violent crimes being reported. Now, I thought that since the president also mentioned in his State of the Nation address the issue of the gender-based violence, so it was being prioritized. But now what is happening in the SAPS itself as a department? Hence, I'm saying 321 members is absolutely nothing out of 56 million people that we are having. You divide the 321 into this 183. How many members are you going to give each unit? So meaning, if we do prioritize in the next intake, we make sure that out of the 7,000, maybe the 1,000 will be trained directly or specifically to the FCS units from the college to whatsoever crime investigation institutions where they'll be doing specific courses, from there straight to the FCS units, not waiting that maybe we'll get people from the stations and whatever. And I mean, we must also encourage other experienced members in the detective services to join the FCS units. And how do we do that? I've always mentioned, Honorable Deputy Minister, that we must take care of investigators. That we are not doing. When these people are working for standbys, they are not paid. They are given rest days. It does not make sense. We must go back to paying these people for their standby duties, because they are working holidays, they are working Sundays, but they will get rest days. It does not matter how they deal with this thing. But all what I think that it must be done, these people must be remunerated. They must be compensated for their work. And by this and getting the resources like cars, even offices they don't have. And I've made mention of this. They don't have offices, because they must have private rooms where they do interrogations and everything, but they don't have. I think the Honorable Deputy Minister and the Minister and the National Commissioner, it will be better if you go around all these 183 units to check whether they do have offices. Where are these offices located? Do they have cars? There are other units that does not have commanders, as I'm talking to you now. These people are saving without commanders, and it takes time for posts to be advertised in such a very important unit. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the Honorable Deputy Minister will take my calls. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tekima.
Thank you, Honorable House Chair. I want to agree with my colleague. I think the lack of capacity in the FCA unit is a matter that needs urgent attention. Over and above that, the shortage of resources, particularly when it comes to vehicles, the interview rooms, safe house, there's so much that's going on in the FCS unit. But, you know, my question is this, that many years ago with the previous Minister of Police, it was agreed that SAPS will try to put in a work together with Department of Basic Education and things to try maybe perhaps and introduce this in the curriculum of grade 10, 11, and 12. And then after, and that's to do with policing crime and that so that after matric, then they, you know, those that have finished their grade 12 will go and do a 2 or 3 year diploma or degree course in policing, and then you will have those with passion and commitment to become police officers and investigators and things. I'd like to know how far we are in terms of that. The second thing is this, particularly for the civilian sector, one of your very own, and I've highlighted this before, and I think it was misunderstood. I didn't ask civilian secretary to go and do any investigation on it, but I wanted to know, what are you doing to push steps to ensure that Donovan Prince, which was one of your very own that was brutally murdered, what have you doing or what are you doing to ensure there's justice? Because I noticed that in certain offices, when they are killed, the entire police force is recruited and arresting them, and others, we don't hear about it at all. And I think, you know, the question I want to ask is, does it mean that some of these police officers' lives don't matter? So I'd like you to tell me exactly what you're doing about ensuring that justice is also done to Donovan Cruz, which was one of your very own in any event. I'll stop there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Majozi. Honorable Sheikh Imam, I think that's also a question which we should ask SAPS. Thank you. We can see who could respond to your question. Honorable Majozi, that was the last question.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Apologies for attending the meeting at a later stage. I had another committee meeting. But this one, Chair, is directly to the SAPS as well, maybe also to the Minister and the National Commissioner. If they will ever consider rolling out a vetting process for existing police officers and also a lifestyle audit, so that we minimize what we have seen in the last few days that has been happening. So will they consider maybe doing a vetting internally first before they even start with the process of the incoming police officers that they will be taking? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rapia, you could those members put down their hands, Shembeni and Majozi. Yes, you can respond now, Mr. Rapia. Honorable Shembeni, you can put down your hand.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will ask Ms. Matoma to deal with the issue of the civil claims. And Ms. Wechuamang will deal with the differences in terms of the head count. And with regard to FCS, our studies and the report that is available, which we can share with the committee, we actually agree with the members' consent in terms of the understaffing of the FCS unit. We've got a report which we can share with the members. Ms. Matoma.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the
your face.
The question, yeah.
Question in the civil claim.
In the civil claims, what was the findings?
Okay, on the issue of the civil claim findings, I need to open the email. Can I?
Chair, in the meantime, Ms. Wechuamang will deal with that the other questions while she's connecting.
Okay, the difference between
154 is as a result of the provision for four intents that we intend to have every year, of which the contract, they are on a temporary appointment, and the contract is 2 years now, no longer 1 year as it was before.
Mr. Rapia, your team is very disorganized today. Can you sort yourself out, please?
Okay, thank you. On the issue, on the issue of the civil claim, we when we did the analysis, we found that the actual amount paid for the civil claim against the department has increased by 55.9% between 2018 and 19, and it has gone up to 535 million during that time. And the root causes for this civil claim against the SAPS are issues around unlawful arrest, the detention, the general police action, the shooting incidents, assault, unlawful search of seizure, and defamation and negligence. These incidents are reflective of police conduct, misconduct characterized by non-compliance to organizational control, including the not adhering to the SAPS Code of Conduct and the Standing Order 361. This calls for more efforts within the SAPS to inculcate the professionalism and the democratic principles on the members of the SAPS. So overall, when you look at the civil claims, we found that they have increased. They continue to increase every year, which is a problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Apia?
That's the last input from our side.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Did they talk to the issue of the headcount between the Treasury and themselves, the 158, 154? Secretary.
Yes, we spoke to that DM. We said the difference is we have got an allowance of four posts which are intense. So they are temporary by nature. So that makes that 158 instead of 154.
Okay. No, thanks, Chair. The issues that Honorable Shembeni has raised, we should take note of those issues, and because he is asking us to do things that I think make sense. For instance, saying we must visit the FCS unit and see what is happening. Though we have done that, last I was in East London, we did visit a facility where they work from at Cecilia Makiwane Hospital. There is a section there that is put aside specifically for this in one of the Tuzela centers there. But I take his point on the issues we have raised, and we will take them back as part of what we need to do. In terms of what are we doing with specific cases, I think that we will need to get the operatives to specifically give an updated report to the committee on this, in particular the issue of Donovan. I think in the main that's what we will do. How far are we with education? I think I'll have to verify the facts around what he has raised, that we made a commitment to talk to education to introduce policing in grade 12. We'll just have to verify facts around that. But thank you, Chair. I think we should conclude the responses here. We note what members are proposing, and we'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dim. We'll immediately start with the next presentation.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, members. Thanks, Secretary, and your team for the presentation here. I must indicate, Chair, that we have a slight challenge with regards to the CEO of CIRA. He is not well, but he defied me and said he's going to look up and be part of the presentation here. And you will go and consult a doctor after that. And I hope he's still here. And if he is, I will ask him to lead the team in presenting through you, Chair. But if he has logged out because he's not well, we will ask the CFO to lead the proceedings together with the team that they are with here, Chair, through you.
Dean, the CEO has indicated that he doesn't have a voice.
Yeah, that's why I said I told him to disconnect, and he forced that you'll come here, and you can't come here to just witness. He must talk so that you can hear.
Oh, but DM, let us give Mr. Chauke a break. Mr. Chauke, DM, can you give Mr. Chauke a break? I'm sure there's another person who can do
that. Yeah, no. The chief, the operating officer, and the CFO, they will lead us in the presentation.
Yes. They can continue. The slide is on the screen. You can start.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister, honorable members, and the Secretariat, and the CIRA team will be led by will be constituted by Matlo Usibukhudi, the CFO, Advocate Linda Mbana, Deputy Director, Law Enforcement, the COO Stefan Bannon-Ost, and Acting Deputy Director, Training and Communication, Dr. Sabelo Gumede, and our Corporate Secretary. And the presentations are structured in two parts. There will be operations that will be presented by Mr. Bannon-Ost, our COO, and then I will attend to the last slide of financial position. And then I think Chairperson will follow the method that the previous presentation after the quarter four will take the quarter one. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll allow our COO to take over. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Deputy Minister, for the opportunity. We'll focus on quarter four performance information and financial information. I'm going to get right into the slides and just give a bit of an operational overview and key highlights for our quarter four. We are very pleased to announce that we once again achieved a second consecutive clean audit for the 2019-20 financial year. And as far as quarter four performance is concerned, we achieved 88% of our planned targets. But I will highlight the reason for the three areas that we did not achieve, because in two of the areas we actually did achieve already the annual target, and it's only in one area where we did not make the target. Just a bit of general overview, we conducted 7,155 security business inspections during the period, and for the financial year, 31,700 security officer inspections. For the quarter as well, we conducted 81 arrests in partnership with the South African Police Service following from 8 operations. We also for the year conducted 1,582 inspections in respect of businesses using firearms, and which also followed 1,028 successful finalized prosecutions in terms of the code of conduct and the improper conduct inquiry regulations as implemented in terms of the CIRA Act. The fines imposed for the quarter was just over 7 million rand, and we also registered 33,744 security officers during quarter four and 454 security businesses. In addition, we accredited 241 new training centers and processed just over 500,000 training course reports that we've received from our accredited training centers across the country. Over and above that, we also implemented renewal certificates, and we renewed just over 80,000 individual security officers registration certificates and just over 1,500 security businesses. Public awareness is very close to our heart in terms of the industry and our stakeholders and the public in general. And in this regard, we conducted for the year 196 public awareness campaigns. The overall CIRA performance in respect of the APP targets, Chairperson, as I highlighted, we achieved 88% of our targets in quarter four. The three areas that we did not achieve, two of them, however, we did already achieve the annual performance target. And in one area we did not achieve, and I will highlight where that area is and the reasons behind it. In terms of our programs, in the 2019-20 financial year, we had three main programs, administration, law enforcement, and then communication, registration, and training. And this is just a high-level overview of the performance for the quarter four in respect of these programs. Administration achieved 86%, law enforcement 89% of their quarter four targets, and communication, registration, and training also 89%. In terms of the more detailed breakdown in terms of the performance, I'll first deal with program one, which is administration, and their general purpose is obviously financial management of the authority and providing institutional support to the other core programs of CIRA. The program consists of the Finance and Administration Department, BIT, Business Information Technology, and Human Capital. In terms of the overall program one performance, they achieved 86% as I highlighted, and I will go into a bit of a breakdown. Finance and Administration achieved 100% of their quarter four targets, BIT 100%, and then in the Human Capital area was 50%. It's one particular area that they did not achieve the quarter four target, and I'll highlight the reasons shortly. Just in terms of the overall performance of the finance department, achieved, as I highlighted, the unqualified audit opinion in this financial year, the last financial year, as I've highlighted also, we are very pleased that we have again achieved a clean audit. Percentage of revenue collected on both annual fees and fines. Honourable Chair and members, as you're aware, we are a self-funding organ of state. We do not get or derive any money from Treasury. And in this regard, we collected 89% of revenue that we built on annual fees as well as fines versus our target of 75%. In terms of the establishment of the Guarantee Fund, which is one of our projects in terms of our strategic plan, we submitted we developed and submitted a project plan and a proposal to our council, which was also approved in quarter four. In terms of the business information system, there are two indicators. First of all is the average turnaround time to restore critical IT infrastructure is a test they've done, and they've exceeded their target there. And then we also have a target for business continuity and implementation of the business continuity and disaster recovery plan, which included testing of the plan, which we did in quarter four. I must also highlight that, Chairperson, the roadmap or the blueprint as highlighted in the business continuity plan also assisted us a great deal when the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak started, and we used that blueprint in line with our development of our workplace plans, ensure that we continue with business and try and minimize disruptions. Chairperson, as far as human capital is concerned, they've implemented all the planned performance agreement targets in terms of the implementation of the PMS system. And one particular area, as I've highlighted, where they did not achieve was the implementation of the annual training plan. The achievement was 83% versus the target of 85%. And the main reason for that, Chairperson, was as a result of the lockdown, where we in March cancelled some of the training interventions that was earmarked for implementation. And unfortunately, they did not reach their target in that particular area. As far as the law enforcement program two is concerned, Chairperson, there's two sub-programs. It's the compliance and enforcement program. Compliance program is where we conduct routine inspections, and then enforcement department is focusing more on investigations and working with the South African Police Service and in operations. And then we also have our prosecution and internal legal services. Prosecutions is internal prosecutions where we charge security service providers for any allegations of non-compliance with the code of conduct regulations. As far as this program is concerned, they've achieved 89% of their quarter four targets. And if we look at the sub-programs, compliance and enforcement achieved 83%, and legal services achieved 100% of their quarter four targets. If we do a bit of the analysis in terms of the compliance and enforcement department, they've achieved their targets except in the one area which is highlighted yellow, Chairperson. That means the color yellow indicates that although the quarterly target was not achieved, the annual target was already achieved. In that regard, they did not exceed met their quarterly target, but the annual target for security officer inspections were already achieved in quarter four. And as far as the other areas, criminal cases open, they've overachieved. Businesses that license for firearm inspections that they've conducted, they've overachieved quite significantly for the quarter in that area. And also we are focusing on businesses that's using security dogs and to see the compliance of our legislation as far as that is concerned, and especially the handlers that uses dogs in this environment, and there we also exceeded our quarterly target. Chairperson, as far as legal services are concerned, they've got three key performance indicators. They overachieved in terms of the successful prosecution, in terms of the cases that was placed on the roll, 96% versus their target of 92%, and that's mainly due to improved in level of investigation by the inspectors within the compliance and enforcement department. And they also submitted three regulations for council for approval, which was an achievement as well in terms of, and I will highlight, Chairperson, just those areas of the regulations. It includes cash in transit, it includes close protection officers, and a number of other regulations that's still in that's being implemented in this financial year as well. And then also in terms of the debt collection, they've overachieved quite significantly, and they're working very closely with the state law advisors in respect of businesses that are not meeting their financial obligations in respect of payment of annual fees towards the authority. Chairperson, then in terms of program three, communications, registration and training, there are a number of sub-programs within this program. The overall purpose is stakeholder engagement and marketing and communication, but they're also responsible for industry training standards and to ensure that the industry meet minimum training standards, and then also very much core part of our business is the registration of all security service providers, whether you're a business or a security officer, and then also industry research and policy development, Chairperson, that we are continuously learning more about the industry to ensure that
we can regulate them effectively. And for that reason, this department was established in 2012 to ensure that we have proper research in this sector to also advise the minister where there's a need to improve the regulatory framework. So those are the four sub-programs within the program three. The overall achievement for quarter four was 89%. This is just a breakdown of the four programs. Communication stakeholder, they did not achieve, but I'll highlight the reason why very shortly. Chairperson, registration was met all their targets, including industry training and industry research and development. As far as the communication and stakeholder management program is concerned, although they didn't meet their quarterly four target, Chairperson, they already exceeded their annual target. So the color is also yellow in this area. The overall annual target was 160 public awareness programs, and they already conducted 196 by the end of March 2020. In terms of the registration program, it talks mostly in terms of the key performance areas, in terms of the average turnaround time, because obviously we want to get businesses and individuals registered as soon as possible when they apply to allow businesses to start operating, and obviously for security officers to gain employment and start working. In that regard, we, in terms of the average turnaround for businesses, and the target was 10 days. The average turnaround time we reduced to 6 days, and for security officers, 15 days, and we achieved 14 days. Chairperson, as far as the training program is concerned, there was a target for capacity building activities, which they have achieved. And then one of our aims was to improve the capacity within the training environment, and we set a target to accredit 200 more training security service providers across the country. In this regard, we achieved 241 as a cumulative target for quarter four, so it was quite a significant overachievement. So we have more training centers in South Africa and across the provinces that can assist in the development and training of security officers for purposes of registration and obviously for career advancement as well. In terms of the research department, they've completed two research topics at the EMR for quarter four, and also achieved their annual three research topics, including the two surveys that was a target set and development of policies, and they've actually added additional overachieved in terms of the research publications, where they conducted an additional research paper on railway in the railway environment that complemented the other two programs in aviation security and maritime security. Chairperson, that concludes the performance information for quarter four. I'm going to hand over to the CFO again to talk to the financial performance.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of our financial position, the revenue has increased by 10% compared to the previous year, and the actual revenue is above budget, which equates to 24.6 million. And this 24.6 million is mainly because of the registration, the annual fees and fines, interest received and bad debts recovered, and to ensure that the authority stays as continue to be as a going concern. And I just want to clarify what is what we call the budget. The budget that we refer to here is estimated revenue, because we are self-funded. We don't get money from the vote, but we estimate the budget in terms of projection and economic climate. So that's what we call a budget. It's a target that we should collect to fund our operation. So in terms of the expenditure was 8% above the budget, which is what I'm trying to say here, that if the projected, that we projected that we'll spend so much, but we were above that thing, the budget by 8%, mainly to the provision of bad debt. This is non-cash item, but in terms of your books, you should disclose such, where if you impair a lot of debts, then it affects your expenditure. We also had a surplus for the year ended at 2.1 million, It's slightly less by $1 million from the last year. And we have, because of our funding model, we are operating, we have developed a going concern turnaround strategy that we operate, we monitor on monthly basis through EXCO and ARC and the oversight committees. The next slide details the budget and the actual. So you look at, remember when I was speaking in the last slide, I indicated that the 8% was mainly to the annual fees, which is 15%, and then the registration, which is 24% above, which is what we anticipated to collect. We collected more. And then last year we had, in the previous financial year, we had revenue at 9% and expenditure at 12%. Then we had a disparity of 12% expenditure versus 9%. We have narrowed it down. Now we are 8 to 8, which is the growth. It's more realistic, but we still have to ensure that our jaws, the financial ratio is maintained to ensure that the revenue is higher than the expenditure. And then the next slide, we indicate that the staff cost is 7% above budget. This is also due to non-cash item, leave pay, and cost of living salary adjustment and organizational design, which is what we have done, and then to assess that the staffing requirements. And then the postage and courier, if you remember when our CEO was presenting, he presented the 6%, the 6 days average turnaround time and 15 days reduced to 14 days. So this is an inherent cost for us to be able to improve our turnaround time and achieve our KPIs under registration. And then also the next slide is also, if you the slide about the budget versus expenditure, you realize we over collected on fines, and when we over collect on fine, it's because we have the legal department has been involved in more high profile cases. However, when the inherent cost of collecting the fines was the legal fees was 147 above budget, but we are happy that it has generated revenue, and we will still continue to ensure that we pursue the more high profile cases, but we are not going to neglect the other ones. And then also the telephone and DigiNet, in terms of our internal control, when we were doing our process, we realized that there was an overcharge of 1.3 million from Vodacom that we managed to recover in the previous financial year. And then when this is our financial position, this is a balancing, but I'll just want to go to the next slide and explain the financial ratio. As a self-funding organization, we always check our solvency ratios because our model is no longer working for us, but we are trying by all the best to ensure that we check all the ratios so that we are able to be classified as a going concern. We know, yes, we are not funded by the government, but we still have to ensure that when somebody looks at our financial statement, the position of the financial position is credible. Then when you look at our debt ratio, maybe let me just go to the next slide where you have the details. The debt ratio indicates that if our CIRA is funded through the debt and also the equity. So when you look at our debt ratio, it's 92%, and our equity ratio is 8%. So those are the two key things, but we wish to change the model to the debt to be slightly lesser and equity to be more than that. But because we build our industry, so that's why our debt ratio, the funding model is more 92% and 8% of equity ratio. And the working capital is 0.86%, which is slightly lower from the norm, which is R1 for every rent that we had. But we are confident that the 14 cent ST1 rand, we will still be able to operate as a going concern. And then the debtors collection days are 36, which is acceptable because we must keep a lot of money as a cash collection strategy. And then our staff ratio is at 56%. And it's one thing that we should, when we increase our revenue, the percentage, because the base will be slower, then we need to monitor this very closely. However, in terms of that, we want to change our law enforcement to improve our inspector and security ratio to 1:20. And then I'll hand over to Stefan to continue with quarter one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The presentation is very much a similar format as the previous one, although I'm just highlighting this particular program, we obviously compiled the new APP in line of the revised framework, so that some of the terminology changes a little bit. And in terms of our new strategic plan, we now have four programs, Program 1, Administration, Program 2, Law Enforcement, and then Program 3, Training and Communications and Registration, as now a standalone program. So I'll take the committee through the performance information for quarter one. I'll briefly discuss also the impact of COVID-19 on our operation, and then again the CFO will highlight the financial performance for quarter one. Chairperson, if I can just quickly give a bit of a highlights. Obviously, COVID-19 had impact in terms of the lockdown and then the subsequent alert levels. As I mentioned, in terms of ensure business continuity, we did develop our workplace plans in line with the different alert levels to ensure that we, at some extent, provide services even under lockdown level 4. And it gradually we opened up and you know, increase our services at our respective 10 offices through the different alert levels. I must highlight that obviously we were not spared ourselves in terms of staff getting infected during this period. Up until the end of July, we had 38 cases of our own internal employees that were infected with the virus, and through the grace of God, luckily they all recovered from the virus. We also through our contact tracing, we had 47 people that were directly affected and had to go under self-quarantine in line with the prescripts in the fight against the COVID-19. So it did have quite disruption in respect of our different offices across all the offices and departments. In terms of the achievement, however, Chairperson, we achieved 78% of our planned quarters in quarter one, which we are, you know, reasonably satisfied with, considering, you know, the challenges that we've experienced with COVID-19. But I must emphasize that, you know, it did have an impact and it flowed over to quarter two as well. Unfortunately, some of the, you know, the result of the, you know, the impact of the COVID virus itself. In terms of just overall information, just as a overview, Jefferson, we conducted 769 security business inspections and 8,754 security office inspections. Although the lockdown was implemented in March, our law enforcement staff were working during this period, because the security industry was considered essential service, and therefore we had to ensure that we had our law enforcement component on the ground and to ensure monitor and compliance, not only with the CRR legislation, but also with the COVID regulations or the regulations implemented in terms of Disaster Management Act. And unfortunately, that also had an impact with some of our inspectors falling ill. During this period, we also arrested 382 security officers following from 32 operations. We also conducted 180 inspections at businesses using firearms,
and there was 115 successful prosecutions, Chairperson, that also resulted in imposition of just over R1 million fines imposed against non-compliant security service providers. Most of these fines, Chairperson, came from guilty pleas through alternative dispute resolution or settlements where service providers agreed or admitted their guilt, and they were subsequently fined. We also registered security officers as well as security businesses, although through our workplace plans, we actually only started that to a limited extent during the end of May, and then increased the number of registrations during the different alert levels. We also issued renewal certificates for security officers and security businesses, and also conducted public awareness campaigns. In that this regard, Chairperson, we obviously were restricted in terms of face-to-face kind of public awareness campaigns. So our communication department arranged digital and virtual awareness campaigns with stakeholders so we can continue with our work in educating our stakeholders and the public in respect of the work of the authority. Chairperson, in terms of the overall performance, as I highlighted, the achievement was 78% for the quarter. And if I go into the programs, program one's constitution is a little bit different than the previous financial year. We still have our financial management of the authority through our finance department. We have a corporate services department, which include our business information technology, human capital and internal legal services. The corporate services unit is a new unit following from the approval of the organizational design that we did to ensure that we align our work with our futures, with our strategic plan, especially in terms of delivering of services. And then we moved our research and development program, a support program within program one. In terms of the overall achievement of program one, 70% achieved of targets achieved in respect of the APP plan. And then if we do the breakdown, we'll see that it's 67% in finance, 50% of corporate services indicators were achieved, and 100% within the research and development unit. This is just a more detailed breakdown, Chairperson. The percentage of bulk revenue collected, the target was 40% in quarter one. We achieved 34%. I must highlight there's obviously a very difficult collection environment that we are working in as an organ of state that's not funded by government, but reliant on the industry to fund its own regulation. The industry itself were obviously also impacted by the lockdowns and COVID-19 restrictions. And, you know, we saw that through our own collection strategies where we struggled, you know, to get businesses to pay their annual amounts. The majority of our money comes, you know, in the first quarter of the financial year in line with the annual fee regulations. So it's been a very tough environment, and we had to enter into payment arrangements with businesses and to meet their financial obligations towards CIRTA. In terms of the unqualified audit opinion, Chairperson, I've highlighted that you know, we obtained the clean audit the previous financial year, and our quarter one target was also achieved. And the same with the guarantee fund, that we moved towards the development of the procurement plan and included in procurement plan. I must highlight, Chairperson, that some of these indicators, considering the financial constraints, you know, we will be struggling to meet them by the end of the financial year. But as we highlighted when we tabled our strategic plan and APP, is that we don't want to wave the white flag yet and surrender in terms of achieving our targets. So we are trying our best to meet all our obligations and our plans that we committed ourselves to achieve. In terms of the legal services sub-program, Chair, this is, human capital program. There's percentage of, again, training interventions implemented. They did not achieve that, and very much as a result of the COVID-19 restrictions, but we are looking at online learning programs, because everyone had to adapt, including the training environment and training industry, to ensure that they can still deliver services, but via virtual platforms. And that is what we are working towards achievement. In terms of the development of the digital business strategy, this is a very key area for us, Chairperson. We wanted to develop a draft strategy by the end of June. We didn't meet that date in view of a number of challenges we experienced in terms of the lockdown, but I can, I'm pleased to announce to the committee that we did that in quarter two, and we are finalizing the digital business strategy, which is very much in line with our five-year strategic plan in digitalizing a lot of our services that this stage require face-to-face contact with clients. So we want to minimize that and obviously allow platforms for applicant security service providers to interact with us, to apply online, to renew certificates online, and a number to do training online, to do a number of services through online platforms, which will improve obviously not only our service delivery, but also our outreach in terms of the provinces and those provinces where we do not have a footprint. In terms of the SAP program, let me just continue. Chair, and this is still corporate services. We also have a number of regulations that we proposed and that was approved for this financial year. One is on the issue of security equipment, especially looking at drones. We also intend to compile regulations for new training regulations and then also for security consultants. And one area in the legal services also to have an indicator in terms of the average turnaround time for finalizing exemption appeals, which we also achieved. As far as the research program and sub-program is concerned, in program one, there's five research concepts that were completed and approved. They're focusing mostly on the area of security service provider rendering services outside of the borders of South Africa and the nature of their services. We're also looking at research into punitive measures. Because although we've increased the fines imposed against non-compliant security service providers, we do find at times that the behavior doesn't change. So we want to look, this research will focus on punitive measures and whether there's not alternative way to change behavior in the industry. We're also looking at private policing or private policing and public space, where the private security industry is moving into areas that usually the preserve of the South African Police Service, to have an understanding to ensure that we can advise the minister as well if there's additional legislative changes that we need to look at. We're also looking at the impact of the Protection of Personal Information Act on the private security industry, because that will have significant impact, so we can also be in a position to guide the industry in, as far as levels of compliance is concerned, and work with the information regulator. And then we're also focusing on the role of Neighborhood Watch, which is also growing within South Africa. Then we will do surveys, and we've compiled the concept document and was approved by EXCO for the surveys to be conducted, and then the policy documents in support of the research, what was also achieved. Then Chairperson, if I move on to law enforcement, again, they are sub-programs of compliance and enforcement and prosecutions. That didn't change very much. In terms of our overall achievement was 57%. They were obviously significantly impacted by the COVID-19 lockdown, where we primarily focus on operations and not necessarily inspections. During this particular time, 50% achievement for the compliance and enforcement program, but we're pleased to say that prosecution achieved 100% of their targets. The areas where we did not achieve in the law enforcement or compliance and enforcement program is the number of security businesses inspected, as well as security officers. We short of target there. We are looking at the turnaround strategy, and we're also looking at self-assessment policy and to enhance our outreach, ensure that businesses are complying with the legislation. So those are things that we're looking at, Chairperson. But as I mentioned, we are hampered in this area as a number of our inspectors also fell ill and were infected by COVID-19, which had an impact in the end of the day in our performance, achieving our performance target. Investigations finalized, we're on target. Our overachievement as far as that is concerned, including the percentage of criminal cases opened and with our assistance from the South African Police Service. Firearm inspections, we are on target. We've also looked at strategy and how we're going to do for the remainder of the year to see how we can achieve our annual target. As far as self-assessment, and this is in line with our five-year strategy, is to develop a self-assessment policy and process for all security businesses to conduct a periodic self-assessment in terms of compliance with the legislation and regulations. We brought this a little bit forward because we want to drive this process in support of the challenges we're experiencing with our in-person inspections. And we have approved the self-assessment policy to EXCO to move forward on this area. As far as the sub-program of legal services are concerned, they overachieved. 97% of cases placed on the roll were successfully prosecuted, and as I mentioned, also through alternative dispute resolution, where it wasn't necessary for the parties to be for the inquiry to be heard in person, but where the industry members that were charged acknowledged and accepted guilt, and they entered then into an arrangement in terms of settlements, where they pay fines imposed or other sanctions as indicated in the ADR. And then, Chairperson, the program training and communications. In terms of this program, they're responsible for industry training, as I highlighted in the previous quarter's presentation, and also for marketing, communication, and stakeholder relations. They achieved all their performance targets for quarter one. And if we break it down into the two sub-programs, training 100%, they had five output indicators, and then marketing, communication, and stakeholder relations, two indicators which they've both achieved. If we look at just a breakdown of the training program, average turnaround time for new applications for training centers to be processed, the target is 20 days, they have achieved 10 days, although we must admit, Chairperson, that in the course of the lockdown, we had very limited numbers of people applying for accreditation because training centers could not give in-person training during most of that time. In response to that, what CIRA did is we allowed industry to work towards distance learning, because we do have training centers accredited for distance learning, and we opened that up for more training centers in order for them to be able to continue functioning, and for learners or security officers to allow them also access to learning during the period of lockdown. As far as the new application for instructor application concerned, we didn't receive anything in quarter one, Jefferson. That's why we didn't give any rating there. Number of new accredited courses developed, Jefferson. We identified three areas for new courses that we want to look at. That includes the cash in transit and some specialized courses that we've identified. As far as the program the number of external training centers established is a new area that we are focusing on as well, Chairperson. And the purpose behind this is to have external assessment centers accredited, where learners after completion of training will go to be examined or assessed in terms of their competencies. We've developed a policy as far as that, and in terms of our strategic plan, we are moving towards that implementation more aggressively in our next financial year. And then also for online examinations and assessment, we've developed the draft concept document, and this is also part of our digital strategy, where learners will complete an online assessment or examination that's developed and by CIRA itself and no longer training centers. Chairperson, then the sub-program dealing with communications, number of winners, they've overachieved with one. And then we're also looking at the cooperation of our international regulators. And of course, we do benchmark and learn from one another. And we looked at the number there, Private Security Authority in Ireland, the Security Industry Authority in UK, and also the Private Security Regulation Authority in Jamaica. And we are will be entering into discussions with them to get cooperation agreements in support of our improvement of our regulatory system. And then our last question.
My apologies. Could you finish the last program within 10 minutes, please?
Will do, Chairperson. Then just our registration program. There's 100% achievement there in terms of the four indicators. We've again referring to the average turnaround times of registrations, which we achieved, including the development of the ICT. Specifications for the online registration system. And then we also did the Defence Ministry, which is also part of our five-year strategy. I'm going to hand over, Chairperson, to our CFO for the financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of our financial position at quarter one, we are also affected by the COVID. However, in terms of our collection rate or the budgeted revenue, we did not collect. We were out by 16%, which amount to 30 million. And mainly because of most of our services, registration, cost report, sale of goods, they require interaction. They must come to our office to register or to buy to get the ready cards and certificates. So those were the ones that are highly affected by the lockdown levels. And then, but we have, in terms of the annual fees, because it's not, it doesn't require interaction, we managed to collect 9% over the estimated amount that we should have collected. But based on that, what we have done as the authority, we developed a turnaround strategy to ensure that all the effects of COVID are not impacting a lot on our financial position and also the service delivery. So we have managed, when you look in the latter part of expenditure, we have saved 21% in terms of cost containment. And mainly this the 21% relates to the advertising and publication, which is 97% below. That means we saved 97% and printing and stationery because we had online, we were not in the office. And then also the traveling and accommodation expenses because we are now, for an example, today we should have been in Cape Town, but we are on online. So those are some of the things that we have explored. But we managed to save 21% on our expenditure. So we will move it to other critical KPIs in terms of our annual targets. And then the slide, the next slide is our financial position. This one is the one that we analyze our solvency ratio, where we look at our budget, where the solvency, whether we are able to fund our operation if it closes. And for us, it's very critical, Chairperson and the committee. It's for us is to be able to, because we have a challenge of the going concern because of the modules. This is what we do on monthly basis. We check the presentation of our financial position to the public at large, whether if they analyze it, it's a good thing. For example, if somebody wants to invest, yes, we know it's not, we don't want a person to invest. But it's something that we would want the financial statement to look proper so that it's appealing to the public and they have our financial position is up to scratch. And on that one, I'll move to the measures that we've put in place in terms of cost containment and the turnaround strategy. We have introduced a distance learning. If you remember, we have a cost report that we did not perform on. We have introduced distance learning to ensure that we still have a way to collect on cost reports. And then also we have a digital platform, the security service provider. We have the app, and then we want to ensure that now we have a where a person can have to print a renewal of certificate. So it's something that we are exploring, but we have now moved to online bookings where we minimize our walk-ins. And if we look at the next month coming, the quarters, the funds, the collection rate is now improving. And then also on the 9% of annual fees, we have 21 debt collectors that are assisting us. These debt collectors are appointed on a fee model. So when they collect, they get a percentage of that, which is not a lot, but we have seen an improvement. If you in the previous slide, we've collected almost 100% of what is due, but we're still making sure that what it was due in the previous years is collected. I think this one is the last slide. And then what we also did internally is to ensure that we have weekly cash flow management to check, do we still have funds, or to project the cash, the actual cash that is in the bank versus the actual expenditure that should be paid every week. And then we also, in terms of our staffing requirements, we only filling only critical position. And then also consultancy costs, we looked, it's one of our turnarounds, cost containment, traveling and printing and property rental. We also looking at some of our leases are coming to an end. We just want to assess the space there. If it's a bigger space, we can reduce it to a smaller space. So those are some of the things. And then most of the things that we are doing, we conducting virtual meetings, a workshop virtually. And then we also, because we are now mostly online, we introduced the spend manager to ensure that we don't have cost overrun, because once it goes out of data, it charges extra. So we have also, when we want to configure systems, we use our in-house officials. But when we were, when I was looking at the presentation of the previous presentation, they spoke about the COVID thing. I just want to add a line there. That during the audit of this financial year, we worked very closely with AGSA. They audited all our PPE procurement, and they found us to be compliant in all of them. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those presentations. I will now take a round of questions. I've noted Sheikh Imam.
Chembeni.
Chembeni.
Majozi.
Malekwa. Malekwa. Do I have more hands? Carte Blanche, do you have a hand?
Yes, Chairperson, my hand is up there.
I see your hand, Carte Blanche. All right. Could I start then, Sheikh Imam, Chembeni, Majozi, Molekwa, and Carte Blanche?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for that presentation. I was very happy to hear that you are self-sufficient, that you don't rely on government to fund you. But at the same time, I think you need to explain to me about this liabilities of 92% compared to your assets. You could just give us some explanation in terms of what my first question, however, is this, that can you tell us, I'm worried because you talk about success, particularly with the number of fines that you have given and things. Now, there's two ways of looking at it. That it's a fantastic job that you have done. People that have not compliant, you fine. But don't you think it's a worrying factor when there is such a high level of non-compliance? Does not augur not well for the industry if you have these people that are supposed to provide and protect the people on the ground are themselves violating a lot of these conditions that have been set by you? So I'd like you to explain that to me. Could you tell us what percentage in the in the last year, if you could perhaps tell us, and what number of firearms have been stolen while in possession of security officers, and very importantly, what number of illegal firearms were found in them. I'd like you to tell us what number of inspectors you have to conduct oversight over these people, because I see you're doing a fantastic job in, visiting these places and finding them and those kind of things. Now, tell me, I noticed that a lot of them have not been paying the annual fees, which make it very difficult for you to operate, the fact that you rely on these for your operational cost. Now, if they do not pay the annual fees, are they in compliance with employees, employee benefits? What percentage of them? Because I've noticed a lot of these companies are employing foreign nationals. Do you have some mechanisms to be able to track and see whether these people are legitimate in terms of documentation? Are you doing checks together with Home Affairs and things to ensure that these people are absolutely compliant and they have the right to actually be in the country and be employed as well? Because I noticed there's quite a large percentage of foreign nationals that are employed, particularly in the security industry. Now, the other thing is this, you say there were 115 successful prosecutions. Could you tell us what number of these people are repeat offenders that are doing the same thing again and again? And is the fine a deterrent? Or do you think you need to do more about that? And I finally see that you're employing a lot of debt collectors, which means you're having a tough time in getting these money. And a percentage of that is bringing. Could you tell us your model, your successful model, how you are living above the water and meeting all your commitments and things despite the difficulty in getting your month annual contributions and things? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. I've got just a few questions here about the debt collectors. How many companies, how many debt collection companies does CIRA have or have CIRA contracted to collect the outstanding debts? And then number two, did the COVID-19 restrictions affect the court proceedings against the Durban-based company, that is the RUSA, that the court date was initially set for July? And then number three, I've got the question of companies. If companies are given a contract of 3 years, for instance, when it comes to the registering of the security guards working in that company, what does the law say? Is the company allowed to register and register members for 1 month and re-registering them each and every end of the month, or they are supposed to register the members for the 3 years or a period exceeding 12 months? That's what I want to understand, because there is a company that is registering members. Every month, these members must re-register every month. Is that in line with your regulations or what? Number two, money is being deducted from members, the Provident Fund money, which is supposed to be paid to SALT according to the regulations. But now we find out that money is deducted from the members and it's not paid to SALT. And what is CIRA doing with these companies that are not paying the Provident Fund of the members? Salt. And lastly, how many security guards tested positive on COVID?
been up to so far. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, you are muted.
Thank you, Honorable Shembeni, Honorable Majozi.
Thank you, Chair. Mine would be, firstly, let us welcome the presentation. It's always nice to get a positive feedback from the from CIRA especially, and also congratulate them for getting the clean audit. With that being said, Chair, on the issues that of targets that they were talking about on training of employees and inspection of businesses, Chairperson, I think that to avoid what has happened maybe with that, with them not reaching their target, considering that it was that time of COVID, I think they must just adjust to digital migration quickly so that they avoid not meeting their targets in the next coming presentation and with regards to training and inspection. Chair, I don't know maybe if they do have this information. There are complaints that we have received. I think also the Deputy Minister maybe will also be able to respond on that one, where there are police officers and were patrolling with a security company which was led by Somalians, of which they were beating up people. I think, I don't know how can we address this so that we avoid issues of now going back to issues of xenophobia, because I have received several calls that such incidents were taking place, especially here in Johannesburg. I'm not sure if CIRA is aware of that or the police department is aware of that, but those were the two, Chairperson, that I do have. And once again to say, we welcome the presentation and we are happy with the performance of CIRA. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also start by appreciating the presentation by CIRA and also appreciate their performance in obtaining the clean audit. Chairperson, on the presentation on the annual performance, especially on the finance issues, there was a slide that indicated that the COVID-19 had impacted negatively, especially on the private securities. Therefore, the CIRA had a difficulty in terms of the assessment on the compliance and enforcement. Now, Chairperson, I just want to check, because we also understand that the securities, most of the security companies were not working due to COVID-19, and they are also affected negatively by the COVID-19. Hence, most of the security companies have returned to workers. So I just want to check with CIRA that as the president made a call on the economic recovery, as part of the social responsibility, is there any plan in place by CIRA to support especially the emerging companies that were affected badly by the COVID-19? And if there is that kind of support, what kind of support is there to make sure that at least those companies are uplifted because they are trying Township Zira. Zira is collecting revenue from them, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable De Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, let me also start by, I want to commend Zira on their performance and specifically their clean audit that they achieved. Chairperson, to a large extent, I was covered by my colleagues, but I have a few questions. We heard about quite a few people that got arrested, charged, and even successfully prosecuted. My question is the first one, how many businesses were also charged, prosecuted, and, successfully prosecuted then? Chairperson, I also want to get a sense of how many, maybe a percentage of businesses operating in the industry without licenses. If you can just maybe get a sense of that. Chairperson, and then quite often you find companies and their people, they are wearing uniforms, insignia, stuff like that, vehicles, that is very closely or very similar to police uniforms. And how many have been charged for this offense and what is being done to prevent that from happening in future? Chairperson, thank you for that.
Thank you very much. You have an opportunity to respond to those questions now.
Thank you. Let's allow the COO to come in, Mr. Badenoch.
Mr. Badenoch.
CFO, are you able to comment?
Yes, we are, Deputy Minister. Now it's Advocate Mbana for the law enforcement questions.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good afternoon, actually, Deputy Minister. Good afternoon, everybody that is present in the committee today. I'm going to deal with the questions that are relating to law enforcement. And my name is Linda. My surname is Mbana. I'm a deputy director responsible for law enforcement. I will start with the questions that were asked by Honorable De Blanche. He asked about how many businesses have we arrested and or maybe directors of the businesses have we arrested, charged, as well as prosecuted. We will see in the presentation that was done that we've got 115 matters that were successfully prosecuted in the last quarter. Some of the companies that are included in the 115 are actually flowing from the previous quarters. So we do not currently have the current percentage for the last quarter that we can present. And then the second question was asking about businesses that are operating within the industry without licensing. We do not have that steps because they are not supposed to be operating in the first place without registering. As soon as we get our intelligence and as soon as we get complaints and information from the community and from the people out there who see them operating, we then do our own investigations and we open criminal cases against such businesses. And if it transpires that the owner and or the manager and or the director of that particular business that is operating illegally so is registered with us in his or her personal capacity as a security officer, we then also deal with it internally by following our prosecution processes. We either suspend the person and or withdraw that particular person in his personal capacity. And I think the last question was about the uniform that are won by different companies that resembles that of either SAPS or the soldiers. We have now have our regulations that addresses the uniforms published, and we are following that as law enforcement. We have circulated the approved regulations, and each and every company, as we are talking, knows now that the regulations have been approved and they are being implemented. There was a question that was asking about a number of people in the industry that were found to be positive from COVID-19. After our engagement with the portfolio committee, the previous engagement, we then did a circular to the industry where we were advising them and requesting the directors or the owners of the companies to advise us of how many people have been tested positive, what measures did they put in place to protect those people? Are they following the regulations and the guidelines, COVID guidelines? And they all came back to us and gave us proof where we were needing proof, indicating what steps and measures did they put in place to protect their members. And to answer the actual question that was looking for the number, at the end of September, we were sitting at 4,500 members that were reported to have been positive. And we are doing a follow-up now to check how many from those have recovered. We did not get any reports from the industry that indicated serious casualties as to how many actually died, but we got an information about how many were tested positive. We also got feedback that indicated that some of the members actually recovered, but we currently do not have a death to that effect. The Provident Fund question that was asked, money that is deducted from the members but is not paid, we are following that up as well. We are investigating and we are forcing the companies to actually pay the money into the Provident Fund. Those are the matters that we sometimes fine the people that are not, the companies that are not paying the Provident Fund. We fine them and because they do not really warrant us to withdraw the companies. I think I'm actually answering another question that was talking about why are we not withdrawing and what do we do in order for us to make sure that there is compliance. There is another question that was talking about 115 successful prosecuted matters. And the question was, do we have repeat offenders? Yes, we've got repeat offenders and we've got a system, we've got guidelines, we've got a fee model that advises us as to how do we penalize those people. And if a person is a repeat offender and the matter does not really warrant withdrawal or is not a serious matter in terms of our annexure that indicates and detects to us who must be charged for what, we then fine that person heftily so. We do have repeat offenders, but I must indicate that those that are repeat offenders, but the matters or the allegations are falling within our Schedule A, we then don't settle those matters. I think that's all from now. I will hand over to firearms. Yes, there was another question about firearms, number of firearms that were stolen, number of firearms that were illegal, and the impact of criminality by the security officers within the industry. We get those matters where people have been accused, and after investigation, it transpires that indeed they have done such misconduct. Those security officers, we suspend them and eventually withdraw them. We do not actually end there. We even go as to targeting the actual owner of the company to say, if you took precautionary measures, this could have not happened. So we deal with those matters where there are criminal elements from the security officers. We do not have a number of firearms that have been seized by SAPS from them, and we do not have a steps of illegal firearms that has been seized by SAPS from them, because it is SAPS that is seizing such firearms. I think there was another question about the Rosa case that is based in Durban. And in our previous meeting, we indicated that the matter was coming before our tribunal in July. Indeed, it took place, and I think it rolled over up until August. But I must pause then to indicate, Chairperson, that the matter that we were having before us was talking only on one charge, and one of the members of the company impersonalized SAPS. So like I indicated, there are instances whereby we don't only focus on the actual security officer, but also follow the actual company. So in this instance, we did not only focus on the officer who impersonalized SAPS, but we searched to the company, you should have guarded against this. So that is why RUSA was fined, or was charged rather in this instance. And they came showing remorse, and they indicated that since our previous fine of 20 million, they are trying to live by the book, but it didn't end there. As much as they pleaded guilty for something that was done by their employee, we fined them another 1 million just to show them that we are keeping checks on them. Thank you so much. I will hand over to the CFO.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll attend to the financial question. The first one, I was asked to explain the 92% in terms of the debtors ratio. In terms of our model, we are expected in the beginning of the financial year, our debt ratio looks like, for an example, in quarter one, we are at 54%, because when you raise debtors, they form part of your assets. So your assets become more, but as a year goes by, you collect those debts, you move them from your assets, and then you use the money. So that's an ideal thing, but it's because also we are not making profit on that. But it starts high, and it ends low. It starts low, but it ends high at the end of the financial year. And this is the model that we are talking about, that it's a debt model. Like you raise debt, you bill service providers, and then they pay you. When you raise debt, you classify them as assets. Then the next one, it's I was asked also to explain how do we still ensure that the annual fees in terms of this model, I think this one advocate answered it, the annual fees, the withdrawal, because we have the debtors policy where we send numerous follow-ups, and then in the next one we suspend and we withdraw. And then we also, as part of that, I can answer also the part of what do we do to ensure that the service providers, security providers that are were affected by COVID are still, what do we do in terms of a social responsibility? Unfortunately, we cannot say, in terms of our book, we cannot write off our debts, their debts. What we have done, we have allowed them, introduce the payment arrangement, and sometimes we even waiver the interest if the merit of the case warrants that. So those are some of the things that we have done to allow them, especially the small ones. We've got a payment arrangement, and we try to assist them to pay a little by little, so that we, at the end of the year, we don't have to impair a lot, because it's going to impact on our financial position. And another question that was asked is how many debt collectors. We have 21 debt collectors that we have deployed on fee model. And then what we have done in terms of our to ensure that this model, with its challenges still, we still maintain our financial position and in good health. We are constantly having a turnaround strategy to ensure that we stay within. This is something that we don't even, that's why we have the last two slides of quarter one, we indicated that we have weekly cash flow management, and then we also assess whether there are things that we can defer, like deferring of purchases of assets and other projects. However, the projects that are deferred, they must be executed within the strategic planning period. Like, for an example, this is the year one of the strategy, But if you defer it, it must be concluded in the strategic plan period. And then also what we have done is a constant review of the expenses that we have, that we are expensing. So we are making sure that this model, with its challenges, it doesn't affect us negatively. I think those are our answers from this side. Okay, Stefan will answer the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was also a question whether we are concerned about the high level of compliance within the private security industry. I think, first of all, from the analysis that we've been doing for a number of years, we are around about at the level of 78% compliance and 22% non-compliance. That is obviously a matter of concern, and it's also highlighted in our strategic plan over the next five-year period, where we want to improve the compliance level to 90%. Part of it is obviously the compliance behavior of the private security industry, because we do have some repeat offenders that are just not or continue to flaunt the law. Although we increase the penalties quite significantly, that's partly one of the reasons in this financial year. The research department is conducting research and will develop a paper on the issue of behavioral change and what punitive measures should we as the authority look at to improve the level of compliance and not have the repeat offenders. There was also a question in terms of our relationship with the Department of Home Affairs and the concern there's a high level of foreigners in this industry, and that's true. There are a number of businesses that flout the law and employ unregistered foreigners, and obviously our law enforcement activities deal with that through our inspection programs. But from CIRA's perspective, we've also had challenges with foreigners taking on the identity of registered security officers within the country and then operating illegally in that manner. Now, through our relationship, because we do have a signed memorandum of agreement with the Department of Home Affairs and have a very good relationship, I must add, with the Department of Home Affairs. We've implemented the renewal of registration certificate requirements, where we are linked with the population register of the Department of Home Affairs and verify the identity against the population register to give credibility to those that's in possession of CIRA certificates. Another question, and I believe it's the last question I think it's two more. The one was on the companies that's forcing the security officers to sign new contracts on a month-to-month basis, although they in the employ of the security business and who has a contract for 3 years. Those are kind of things that we do look at from an exploitation of the security officer's perspective, and we do have empowering provisions in terms of the code of conduct to look at that. But I would also like to highlight, Chairperson, that there's a bargaining council for the private security sector that was established by the Minister of Labour that creates a platform or a council for the private security industry to deal with issues of unfair labor practices, non-compliance of labor legislation as highlighted in a bargaining council agreement, as well as dispute resolution. So we are educating our security officers as well to approach the bargaining council as they are established in terms of labor legislation to assist with areas of exploitation of labor. And Chairperson, a comment on the digital strategy. Yes, that's a very important roadmap for us going forward as the regulator. And we are obviously moving towards its implementation to ensure that we can have digital inspections, digital registrations, and all of the and digital training examinations, etc. Chairperson, one member also highlighted the concern about a security company involved with the allegation of the South African Police Service security officers being involved in beating up Somalis. Obviously, we would like to have further information because we will investigate that in conjunction of the South African Police Service and take action if necessary. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Dim, would you like to conclude?
Yeah, no, just to reaffirm the last comment with regard to the question that was raised by Honorable Majozi about collusion between the police and the security company and some Somalians beating up people in Johannesburg. That if we can be advantaged with information around that so that we can follow this up. You can't have the South African police conducting themselves in that particular manner. It's completely unacceptable. It must be investigated. You know, human rights must guide in us all in the security industry and the South African police in interacting with South Africans to ensure that we are all in line with what the Constitution is saying and we all enjoy the rights enshrined in the Constitution. We can't, because that authority that is given the responsibility to can search people, to can use necessary force, we then exploit that situation and subject our people to inhuman treatment. It's unacceptable, and we will be happy if we can be given more information so that we can follow up on this matter. But otherwise, we appreciate the opportunity and the platform you gave us to make a presentation on the fourth quarter and the first quarter report of 2019-2020 and 2020-2021, and the response by the team in terms of the questions that members have asked. And as we say, we remain guided by yourself, because this is where we come and account to the people of South Africa. And through you, we are given advice and guidelines on how best we can do our work. We can only improve by interacting with yourself and being open and frank with you. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable DM, and thank you very much to your team. Your team did very well today. I'd like to congratulate our presenters and those who responded to our questions. I do believe that we had very fruitful discussions and that members' questions were responded to. Dear, my only concern right now, it's not about these presentations. When can we expect the annual reports, all the departments in the police portfolio need to provide us with the annual reports, and we have very strict time frames for that to happen. Can we, this is not a conversation between me and you, Jim. The members need to know as well when we will be able to deal with the annual reports. Over to you.
Well, thanks very much, Chair. I think we can arrange it through your office so that we are able to come and make the necessary presentation. But I'll make sure that from our side, we are ready to do that.
Thank you, Honorable Members. We'll arrange that the annual reports are ready and that we communicate to you in due course and well in advance. When we will attend to those annual reports. Thank you very much for the presenters. Thank you very much for the team. DM, please restore your minister. I think he has gone to Senegal today. It's quite complicated. Convey our good wishes. We will also convey our good wishes to the minister. Good luck for Friday. And we will see you tomorrow. The meeting is then adjourned. We are doing IPED tomorrow, and we do have sufficient time for IPED. So thank you very much. The meeting is now adjourned.
Thanks, Chair.